on the gas tax, and a portion of that was committed to these bond payments of the authorization of 2008. Am I remembering that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, the appropriation in 2008 was specific to trunk highway bridges. And so the idea was the $1.8 billion number would take most of the fracture critical or structurally deficient bridges off of the trunk highway system. So that authorization, MnDOT is coming towards the end of that authorization within these next few years. So starting in fiscal 2018, they have 4 years to encumber that bond authorization with cash flow and projects. And this would essentially, though it's not specific to bridges, start a new chunk of bond authorization over until fiscal 2028. That after fiscal 2028, that last chunk of bonds could be encumbered and spent on projects. But specific to debt payment or to payments, the Trunk Highway Fund makes all the debt service payments, so there isn't a piece of the revenue picture in terms of the gas tax change or the registration tax change that is specifically committed to debt service. That's a little bit of a difference from the 2018 legislation, Chapter 152, in which there was a specific debt service surcharge that blinks off after the debt payments are made on, or after all the debt service is made on the Chapter 152 bonds, but that language is not in this increase, if that helps answer your question.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lee. So about that 3.5 cent blink off, when that occurs, that those 3.5 cents then just turn into regular gas tax, or I don't know what the right term would be, but.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, the rate is lowered once the debt is repaid. So then there's less money going into the HUTD to the local roads and the trunk highway fund once the debts were paid in 2008, or once the 2008 debt is paid off, if that makes sense.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when will that occur?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, once all of the bonds are paid off from the 2008 authorization, so if things are cash flowing right now, the bonds are 20-year lifespan. So it would be, I think, well into the 2030s, 2040s. I think I might want to have MnDOT answer that. So,
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Lee. So it's a long time.
It's problem, a long time. I think.
Yeah. Well past my tenure here. You'll still be here, I'm sure.
Well, I know Representative Carlson will still be here.
Perhaps. So,
Representative
Mr.
Torkelson.
Chair, Mr. Lee, if we didn't do these bond authorizations on this bill, would that limit our ability to authorize these bonds sometime in the future?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, no, not. Not authorizing this bond amount would not restrain future borrowing, if I'm understanding the question right.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, I think so, Mr. Lee. So these bonds are being authorized. They're not being authorized for any specific purpose other than what we always, I mean, we use these bonds for building roads and bridges. In 2008, they were specifically aimed at the bridge situation, which was a result of the catastrophe. In this case, we are authorizing bonds for no specific transportation purpose, and if we didn't authorize them, that borrowing capacity would be there for whatever purpose we needed it for in the future anyway. So perhaps this question is either more for the author or perhaps later when we have the commissioner up here. Why are we doing this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, just one quick clarification. In the language, there's two tranches of the $2 billion bond authorization. One, the $1.7 billion is for state road construction, and there isn't a specified type of project for that. But then $300 million is for corridors of commerce. And then.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lee, for that clarification. Yes, corridors does get a chunk of that, but we could allocate bonds for corridors anytime in the future, whether this allocation was made now or not. And there is a priority list for corridors. Does this allocation of $300 million go to specific projects in the corridors allocation list?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, no, there is not a specified project list for corridors, and I think I would have to defer to MnDOT in terms of how they would rank and score those if they would have a list.
Representative Torkelson.
I'm going to quit with that for now, Mr. Okay. Chair, but this part of the bill, I think, deserves more analysis as we go through the process.
Thank you, sir. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this question ties in again to that bonding, just because I'm sensitive to the issues you ran into, the language in regards to appropriation of the bonds. When we have $200 million each fiscal year, does that give the department the discretion if they don't use it all in 1 year to use it the following year, or do they have to appropriate it for those particular years? And that's one question that I have, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, the department has the ability to cash flow the projects after the authorization for up to 4 years or get an extension from the legislature. So they don't need to essentially spend $200 million in a single year that is authorized. They have a window of time in which they can spend the money.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's what we thought last year, but the MMB decided it had different interpretation, I think. So I appreciate that. The other question is something that we touched on the other day, and this is to the author, Mr. Chair, and that has to do with this trunk highway pressure. And I think you stated that it really was to deal with inflationary costs, some additional costs for whatever those agencies have. My question is why would we need to take inflationary costs or increased costs in various agencies out of the trunk highway rather than taking out of those agency budgets themselves? That seems just a little strange to me.
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I think this is what we've done in the past. I think we can certainly look at this. It's a very, very small percentage of revenue for that purpose, but I can also defer to House Research and Fiscal on that as well.
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, the operational increases for the Department of Transportation, I think in past years, that depends on how different component units of the agency are funded through different appropriations. Since most are of the Trunk Highway Fund, the history has typically been when the executive branch has asked for operating increases. They have asked for that operating increase out of the Trunk Highway Fund because most of the Department of Transportation is funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I understand that we've done it in the past and that there is some technical legitimacy to it. The problem I'm getting is I'm getting a lot more feedback back in my community saying, well, we don't think we ought to have any kind of increases in gas taxes because it's not going to go to roads and bridges anyway. And this is just one more example of that. And I just think we want to be real careful about how we dilute, I should say, the actual gas tax and others that dollars are going to HUTD and distributed in others. I know the term that we use around here is leakage for that, but this really is an example of that. And I just think we ought to be careful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I just would caution to critique the gas tax revenue on those grounds because it is just such a minuscule amount. And again, I think there is a nexus between, the MnDOT operational inflationary piece and the fund, but it is such a minor part of this. And so I would just be cautious about that critique.
Representative Petersburg. Oh, looks like he's done. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask on, Article 3, Section 9, the tax increases on the special fuel taxes. So you've got three different types of fuel, liquefied natural gas, petroleum gas, et cetera. And those increases in rates are not anywhere near to the 20 cents that is being proposed on normal gasoline. And I just wondered about the rationale behind that.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck. I believe these calculations were made on a proportional basis, but Mr. Lee could, or Mr. Burris might be able to shed some light on that.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, Matt Burris with House Research. The current rates are all roughly in proportion based on energy content of the type of fuel. So you can see actually on page 34, the current law rates for liquefied petroleum gas is on 34.7. 34.9 has the liquefied natural gas rate, and you see that those are lower than the current 25-cent rate for gasoline. So all of the increases kind of scale in the same proportion as they're phased in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Burris. Just 3 cents is all that liquefied natural gas is going up. It surprises me that's proportional, but okay. Is there, Mr. Chair and Mr. Burris, is there a federal gas tax that's applied to all of these special fuels as well? Does that, you know, vary depending on the type of gas?
Mr. Burris, I understand that's possibly beyond your purview, so you can answer at your will.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, there is a federal motor fuels tax. I'm not sure how it applies for the special fuels, so we would have to get back to you on that one.
All right. I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Runbeck.
One more quick one. On page 36, Section 10, in the motor vehicle lease sales tax, that we are have a new calculation as opposed to per capita for Ramsey County and Hennepin County. And what is the rationale there, please?
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, when we started, the history on this is that, in 2008, we were able to provide some additional support through the lease vehicle sales tax to non-Hennepin and Ramsey metro counties and Greater Minnesota Transit. And I think there was sort of an interest over these years to see, is there a fair way and proportional way to include Hennepin and Ramsey as well. And so when we did the initial population distribution, the numbers were very, very high. I think, would have been eye-popping and may have required us to completely rejigger that formula. So we adjusted down the percentages to at least make that in line with how we're addressing the other counties in terms of their support through this particular funding source. So that was the rationale. But I think that perhaps our staff could talk a little bit more detail about why we set it at this rate.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, so the rate that Hennepin and Ramsey receive are such that their percentage of their population for Hennepin, it's the calculation is 20% of their population, and for Ramsey it's 35% of their population. With the amount of increase the motor vehicle lease sales tax for the metropolitan counties, plus Hennepin and Ramsey being in that amount, what that creates is that for the counties that are already receiving motor vehicle lease sales tax aid, they're essentially held. They're not taken. They're not put into the negative. They're held harmless or get a little bit of growth, and that is in addition to the increase that all counties receive as a result of increase in registration tax and fuels taxes. And then the flow through the county state aid formula. So the lease sales tax allocation is over and above that. But within that calculation, essentially, the population count for or percentage for Hennepin and Ramsey and the increase make it such that the collar counties receive either a flat or a slight increase just on the lease tax, not even accounting for the rest of the general statewide county aid.
All right, thank you.
And Representative Rundbeck, before we move on with any other follow-ups, I just want to reiterate the fact that the collar counties are held whole and get an increase. So Scott, Dakota, Washington, Anoka, the counties that are currently benefiting from the lease vehicle sales tax are held whole in the first year and then beyond that have increases. So just want to make sure everyone is very clear on that fact. So Representative Rumbit, do you have any follow-ups on that?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Koznick.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Is there runs on the distribution of that? Obviously, it's a concern of Dakota County. For reference, Scott County doesn't currently participate. No, never mind. That was seated. But yeah, if there was if there's runs on that, I haven't been able to procure them yet. But if you could share that with the committee, that'd be appreciated.
Mr. Lee, Chair, Representative Koznick, yes, I can get that to you.
Further questions, Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I had a bill hearing in a different committee, so I was a little late, but I did go over the bill, and I do have a number of questions.
Proceed.
On line 26.27 for the tab fees, in that whole section, it appears that, you know, the tab fee increases are pretty much across the board until you get to the 11th year, and then there's a decrease from what people are currently paying. Am I understanding that correctly? And if I am, what would be the rationale for that?
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Koznick, yes, you are. The rationale is that we felt that people who have older vehicles, there's a progressive nature to this and the depreciation schedule, and that people with older vehicles should get a break. So we provided that, and of course there's less money for roads and bridges because of that, but we think as an issue of fairness, it was important that we add that.
Representative Koznick.
I appreciate that answer. In page 42, the sales tax across the metro, the 30% in line 42.17, the 30% for highway projects, items I, maintenance, mobility, travel, demand management, and traffic management technologies. Can we get a little bit more what the intent and what those types of items might reference?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Koznick, excellent question. These are things that we looked at some of the projects that the TAB, this is part of the second quarter sent, and we looked at some of the projects that the TAB has funded historically over the last two rounds, these were the kinds of projects that have been typically funded. Obviously, the TAB has a set of criteria, we would expect that they would continue to adhere to that criteria in terms of this particular set of pot of money and set of projects that they would use for that.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, I was kind of more interested, so it says mobility, travel demand management, traffic management. I guess I'm kind of thinking those should be better suited under the allocation for transit rather than highway projects. I think the public would probably consider highway projects to be mostly local roads and bridges. And my concern is that while it shows like an equal percentage for highway projects, equal percentage for transit, then there's another 30% that's kind of a slush fund. My concern is that most of these dollars are not really going into our roads and bridges. And, I think the items in item I for 42.17 might be more transparent in 42.20.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. I unfortunately did not bring, I had yesterday, but I don't have it with me now, the spreadsheet from the latest tab round. And, you know, it's possible that, you know, maybe Mr. Shetnan or someone from the Met Council, when they come and testify, can give you very specific examples of how that money was spent. But there were quite a few projects that I think would fit into the local road category that were funded. And, you know, we can certainly give you some very specific examples. And I don't know if staff has that. That handout? Oh, they do. They're amazing. So I'll just give you a few examples, if that's okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. So this is the 2016 regional solicitation projects approved by the Transportation Advisory Board. So you have highway, you have the interchange at Highway 252 and 66th Avenue in Brooklyn Center, Scott County, Highway 169, County Road 14. Washington County, the Manning Avenue interchange, Richfield, 77th Street underpass, you know, many. So that's under the category roadway expansion. There were six projects: roadway reconstruction and modernization. There were looks like 11 projects. System management. So for example, in your area, 222nd Street reconstruction, Hanson Boulevard. Well, that's Anoka, Hanson Boulevard reconstruction, but 280th
I used to live
Street.
In Anoka County.
Okay. So you're familiar with the Hanson Boulevard reconstruction. 280th Street reconstruction down your way. And you know, so, I mean, I certainly can share this with the committee, but you know, a lot of really good projects, safe routes to school, pedestrian, transit modernization. An example of travel demand management was, you know, a nice ride, authorization, Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. Scott County got some money. So I, you know, we looked at this and we felt it really hit the bill.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Kosnick,
Chair Hornstein, I think those are the list. I don't have a problem with the list necessarily. It's just the allocation of the increased sales tax to constituents and saying that they're going for some of those, like you mentioned, the nice ride. If that's under highway projects and traffic management, I think that's more of a transit allocation, perhaps. But we can continue to discuss it.
Well, Mr. Just to be clear, you know, for that second quarter cent, we set 30% for roads, 30% for transit, 10% for bike ped. So I just gave you an example of a bike ped project, and then the remaining 30% would be at the discretion of the TAB. So, you know, I would take issue with the fact that that remaining 30% is a slush fund. It is
flexible.
Not. It's a flexible fund that the TAB could use for any of these projects.
Do you have any follow-up, Representative Kosnick?
I have.
I think Representative Runbeck had a question on that item, so we'll Representative Runbeck.
I do, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, then, the TAB, Transportation Advisory Board, has really two pots of money, essentially. They are selecting the projects for regional solicitation, which is that just metro-wide, Mr. Chair?
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, yes, and it's traditionally used as the for the federal monies that are coming in, but we felt because of the nature of the TAB as very representative, with county commissioners, mayors, citizens, agencies, that this would be a very appropriate body to, you know, analyze and evaluate projects for that second quarter cent.
Representative Runbeck.
So we are expanding their role from what it is previously, what it is currently.
Yes. Representative
Mr.
Runbeck.
Chair, yeah, I agree. It's quite a lot of additional responsibility. And so the second fund is whatever this amounts to, a couple hundred million, again, that they are selecting and doing the process.
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, it's just under 200 million, I think, mm-hmm. initially.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick, did you have any further questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Moving along to page 44, probably more of a, just a technical question, line 44.12, We're changing the fiscal year. This is to do with the motor vehicle sales tax. Just for kind of background, we're changing fiscal year 2012 to 2020, that these shall remain for all subsequent years. What is the significance of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kozlik, this is one I think I'm going to have to
Mr. Burris.
Staff take a look at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kozlik, you can see that paragraph C establishes a legislative intent statement. This, if I recall correctly, this was originally put into place as part of the motor vehicle sales tax reallocation from the constitutional amendment. That was passed in 2006. I believe it was the 2007 legislature that enacted a phase-in of those dollars. So the phase-in occurred over subsequent fiscal years, and fiscal year 2012 was the last year of that phase-in. So part of the language that was put into place was establishing that that phase-in would be set in fiscal 12 and thereafter. As you can see above, the motor vehicle sales tax allocation is modified, and so that intent statement is updated to reflect the revision that would take place starting in fiscal year 2020.
Representative Kozlik.
Thank you. Does that make it harder for future legislators to adjust this allocation that was spoken to yesterday by Chair Torkelson that has some concerns with it, and I share those concerns? Changing these dates, does that make it more difficult, or is there a further kind of handcuffing future legislatures for adjusting? If
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kozlik, I would not interpret that paragraph as having a substantive impact on what a future legislature could do in adjusting and enacting laws that further modify.
Representative Kozlik.
Thank you. Thank you, and I have another question on a different section if when that's appropriate.
Yep.
I wanted some clarification. We're moving on to section 67, page 101, the airport transportation services account and the special airports fund. If maybe staff could go over the, I believe there's a tax implication to airline carriers. I don't know if that's this provision of this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kozlik, I think that's the tax implications are separate. So currently there is a account for air transportation services in the state airports fund, and that's being modified in this section to establish a second account. And the purposes or the charges that can be imposed under the existing account, which is on the air transportation operating side, are modified a bit. And then the new account is established, and the commissioner is authorized to impose charges for the capital side. So building up funds for a future state plane purchase or for leasing of a plane. So this is sort of a fee-for-service type mechanism for use of the state planes. The tax implications really come out of the appropriations that are in the aeronautics portion of the MnDOT appropriations in Article 1. And the basic mechanism is that there are some fee revenue streams kind of parallel to registration tax on motor vehicles. There's similar registration tax on aircraft, motor fuels tax on aircraft. Those revenue streams go into the state airports fund. There's also an air flight property tax, and imposition, the rate of that property tax adjusts based on the amount of appropriations out of the state airports fund. So the appropriation level has the effect of setting what the property tax is based on. It's sort of that's the dynamic piece to align the total state airports fund revenues with what's being appropriated.
Representative Kozlik.
Helps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Burris, I'm trying to understand it a little bit. Seems a little complicated to me yet, but how would the new taxes, maybe more briefly, be imposed on different airlines in the state of Minnesota here?
Mr. Burris.
Is it based on capital that kind of purchase? Is that what?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, the air flight property tax is based off of, I believe it's hangar space, and I would have to double check with MnDOT exactly where the tax is placed, but I guess for the purposes of changes in the appropriations language, I don't think the what is tax changed, it's the rate of tax that changes based off of the appropriation level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and what does that change?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, in speaking with the Department of Transportation, I believe I might have to get back to you on that.
That's fine. Yeah, just trying to understand for myself and not a gotcha question or anything, but my understanding is that there will be an implication to some of our largest employers here in the state. And so that's why I'm trying to understand it a little bit better about that.
Okay.
So we'll revisit that later.
Perfect. Do you have any further questions? Oh, Representative Torkelson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back briefly to the motor vehicle sales tax. The motor vehicle lease sales tax changes. In the 2017 bill, we committed a portion of that to the local bridge program. That apportionment has been eliminated in your proposal. Mr. Chair, can you tell us how you intend to address those very important issue of local
Thank
bridge?
You. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like this is like the Prime Minister's questions and the show on I think it's on public TV, but you guys have to like hem and haw at my answers like they do in London.
You like some chatter in the background?
Exactly.
I do not approve of any of this.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson. Yes, that was a difficult decision, but we felt that given the significant increase in new revenue to these funds, with the gas tax increase and the license tab fees and some other revenue streams that we could use some of that for cities under 5,000 and the other adjustments that we made within the lease sales tax.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer, Mr. Chair. I do see that you are addressing the needs of cities under 5,000, unlike the governor, which is appreciated. But at the same time, local bridges, I've talked to county engineers all the time, and a steady, dependable stream of funding for that local bridge program is something that they dearly covet. They really feel they need that, and eliminating that, I feel, is really doing a disservice to our counties and the progress they need to make on that bridge list, becomes then dependent on the bonding bill, which is a less reliable or it's a much bumpier road for them.
Thank you.
No pun intended.
Thank you.
Representative Kosnick, did you have any further questions?
I did have two, if that's all right.
Please proceed.
Looking at page 105, share with the committee and the public here, section 73. I'm sorry, that's wrong section. I'll find it here. The concern was
excuse me, Mr. Chair, what page?
I can't find it right now, okay. But I could flip through it. But,
right, but we can talk
maybe,
about it in general.
Yeah, in general, we're authorizing, if I understood the bill correctly, that we're authorizing the Met Council to issue its own debt for selected projects that they've chosen on their own, kind of bypassing the legislative body. I can't remember. I've got it highlighted in here somewhere, but
I think you were correct. That is section 73.
Section 73, I think, is the regional transit bonds, Mr. Chair. I think there was a different section utilizing the new sales tax revenue and authorizing new authority to the Met Council. If I understood that correctly, I wanted to discuss that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, my understanding of this is that this is the this is something that's been done every biennium. It's normally carried, I think the first year I was here, Representative Abrams carried it as the tax chair. This is used for rolling stock and, the general kind of, equipment purchases, things of that nature that the Met Council utilizes. So there's nothing unusual about this. This is something that we have done previously. I think there's some question, though. We're carrying it in this bill because we know this is going to go to the tax committee eventually. I think normally it's been sort of just initiated in the tax committee. It may still end up that way. I know Representative Joachim is kind of having conversations with Representative Marquardt about that. So this is just something that's very typically done. It's not unusual. I think it's been approved on a bipartisan basis. And it's, and I think the bonding level is, similar to what we've had in the past.
Mr. Lee and Burris, did you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair Burris? And members, Representative Hornstein's referring to the regional transit capital bonds. You might be thinking of the bond authorization that's established as part of the sales tax that the council has directed and imposed. You'll see that language on page 42.
There we go. I have it highlighted. And you're correct, Mr. Burris, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Those are the new bonds. If I understand them right, that's a new ability for the Met Council. And I appreciate the comments on the regional transit bonds. I'm familiar with them. I authored them sheepishly in the past a little bit. But I'm more concerned of the new ability to kind of, is it kind of bypassing the legislature's selection of bills and ability to decide a little bit that on those bonds?
Mr. Chair, I will definitely want staff to amplify this, but, as I recall, when we did the initial sales tax that was dedicated to transit via CTIB, CTIB had that same authority. Hopefully I am accurate in this. And this is sort of, that's consistent with, again, past practice. And But I would ask staff if they wanted to comment further.
Okay. Mr. Burris or Mr. Lee, do you have any further comment on that?
Mr. Chair, members, I just might note that whether to require legislatively specifying projects that the council seeks to use bond proceeds on would be, a policy question for the legislature. Bond authorization for political subdivisions exists in current law. This sort of piggybacks on that. So, part of the policy considerations might be a comparison to the bonding capabilities of other political subdivisions.
Representative Cosman.
Thank you for clarifying that. And I guess the way I see it, it is enabling more power to the Met Council and the TAB that they would circumvent the authority that our constituents expect us to do. And have some concerns with that. The difference between, what's in the bill here and previous authority granted to the county's Transit Improvement Board is that that was an elected body of county commissioners. So I think that's a major policy shift that is a concern. And I guess I had another question too, Mr. Chair, if other committee members have a question. 106.11, also dealing with light rail transit through the Met Council. We're changing the date, striking December 31st, 2016, and inserting a new date of February 1st, 2017. Could you share with the committee what the implications of that is and why that's important?
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I believe this is in reference to Representative Carlson's bill that concerns the Botno corridor and the rail. Let's see. The liability questions for rail, freight rail in that corridor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, so it's doing with the liability, not necessarily expanding more appropriations or ability for more appropriations for the Botno line, or no?
Sure, Representative Gosnick, correct. That's okay. My understanding.
All right.
I have one final one, if it's...
All right, please ask your final question, and we'll start with public testimony.
No, the final question then, Mr. Chair, certainly just wanted to mention Section 87 at the line 13.29. I believe that's the repeal of the Dan Patch that we had a pretty healthy discussion.
Very healthy, I would add.
Kind of the Ravage and Savage committee meeting. And so, I'm not going to belabor the point here, but I think for the public to understand that, you know, the legislature had previously enacted this section because it was studied and looked at, that expanding light rail in that area wasn't economically feasible. If it was wanted to be studied further, the legislature previously, and I think rightfully so, left that decision to the local communities, but not the state or the counties, to expend more taxpayer resources on that. And so I have more concerns that I previously had mentioned, but I would like to make it for the record that, you know, that's, in my opinion, expanding more, possibly more light rail, and because of that, you know, we're in a situation where we keep taking on new projects and very expensive projects, and why we're facing a 20%, 70% increase in the gas tax with an inflation index. We're facing a sales tax request increase. And so all these excessive taxes are kind of derived when we start looking at things and changing policy that was previously looked at. And so that's my objection to that one, but we can let that be.
Sorry. Chair Hornstein.
Just a very quick response, and we'll get to the public testimony, I think. Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, just a couple points here. I mean, I think that for many people, there's a principle here that the legislature should not be saying you can't study something, you can't at least examine something, you can't talk about something. And so that's really all we're doing here. It's not a light rail line that I think has been discussed historically. It's a commuter rail line, the Dan Patch. And it may or may not be a good idea. It may or may not be cost effective. But actually, this request came from Scott County and some of the local jurisdictions there. And, you know, it's their choice. We're not requiring the Met Council to reexamine this or reopen this or do a study. But if the authorities there want to do a study, they're able to. But we're just lifting the gag order, as it were. That's all this is. And I just stand by that as a matter of principle.
Look at you being a good government guy.
Good government.
All right, we are going to now begin with public testimony. So first up on our list, we have Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher, followed by Met Council Judge Shetnin. We'll be speaking after that. And so I'll give a little leeway, 3 to 5 minutes, if we could, to our two agencies under our purview, two of the agencies under our purview, and then following that, we will keep everyone to 1 to 2 minutes after that and try and get through as many people as we can before our hard stop of 11:45 this morning. And as people are testifying, if you keep your eyes on me, I'll help you when you're getting close to your two-minute mark so I don't have to cut you off. So there we go. So Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, Commissioner of Transportation. I am here today to first and foremost thank the author of the bill for putting together such a comprehensive, dependable transportation bill, and that includes both our roads and bridges and transit. It's important to the future of the state. although there are differences with the governor's bill, and there are certainly improvements that I know we will continue to work through, I wanted to come today and be sure to thank you all. It was actually a pleasure to listen to all your questions and to hear where the concerns are about transportation right now. We look forward to being partners with you at MnDOT as we move forward. I want to address just a couple of questions that were asked, and I think the first one is what Representative Petersburg referenced, which on the spreadsheet is page 2 of 12, and the issue of our base and operations and maintenance and the decline that MnDOT faces, and whether this is should be included out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And so, members and Mr. Chair, I would just like to say to all of you, when you go to Target and you're shopping in those aisles and someone's helping you find something, there are many things that have happened at a Target store before you ever get to see what is in that aisle. And it's like that at MnDOT. Before you ever get to drive on that road or drive on that bridge, there are many things that go into the production of roads and bridges in Minnesota. And that includes the personnel. That includes our engineers. That includes our HR, who makes sure that we're hiring the right folks and keeping ourselves out of trouble along the way. So I just want to I know that some people would like to call these a word I'm not even going to say here, because I don't believe that the delivery of the program, we would not have a program of roads and bridges in the state of Minnesota if we did not have those people to support it. So I think the technical issue here is that in the last biennium, if we do not make this change, we will face a cut in personnel, and that will severely hamper our ability to deliver the program for all of your constituents and the people of Minnesota. The second thing I want to note is, although the chair has and the author of the bill has chosen to handle the tab issue a bit differently, a good statistic to remember is that of our 4.9 million vehicles in the state of Minnesota, registered in the state of Minnesota, the majority of those vehicles are over 11 years old. And so I think that it's one of the important things that the chair is trying to get at with the reduction in the tab fee. And to the issue, although it's going to the tab, the issue of mobility on highways. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I will say it's an issue that I have a bit of language issue with when we talk about mobility. I've struggled with this in the department myself. But what it means is it means a better ride for folks in their vehicle. It means less traffic congestion. So mobility in MnDOT's terms are all about the technology and the types of things that are both here and coming that are going to extend the life of our roads and bridges into the future. So although that money is going to TAB, obviously the delivery on that system will partly be MnDOT's responsibility. So to the chair's point, to help him with that. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to follow up with one thing. I know you all hear from constituents every day, but yesterday in my mailbox at the department, and I have to say, I think this person typed this on a typewriter, which also I adore, and I'm a stamp person, and there's an airmail stamp right on there as well. So I just want to read this to you, because I think it's an important voice to hear from Minnesotans. Dear Commissioner Kelleher, congratulations on your appointment to the Department of Transportation. This is dated March 29th. You have a challenging job before you, but I have no doubt you're equipped for the task ahead. I maybe should send that to the Senate, right, Mr. Chair? I keep pretty close touch in the daily legislative sessions and was impressed by your presentation a week ago, as well I saw you on TPT Almanac recently. She's paying attention. I'm a strong supporter of the governor's request for a much-needed gas tax. I'm in low income, but I drive the streets and highways, and I think it's my duty to help support the needs to fund the repair of the streets and highways in our state. Boy, do we need it! Exclamation mark. Driving through those potholes, or around them, I should say, is scary. She ends by saying, if Republican South Dakota can do it, so can we. Thank you for your service on our behalf, sincerely. I'm just going to say Sandra because I'm going to protect her last name here. I just want to tell you that last weekend alone, I was at a quilt shop and three people came up to me and asked me if we would please get this done to raise the gas tax. Quilt shop shoppers are thrifty people, but they know about investment and they know about making something. So I want to thank you all. I know you have a long road ahead of you yet, but I want to thank you for this bill, Chair Hornstein. I want to thank you members for all of your hard work, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Torkelson, you have a question?
Mr. Chair, the issue of bonds that we addressed earlier in this hearing, would you like to address that now or later, Madam Chair, or Madam Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson. The issue that you started with the authorization of the 10 years of bonds, is that the reference point? Okay. So the head nod is yes. I think that, and Mr. Chair, I think your concern, if I'm recalling this from the beginning of the hearing today, was whether this needed to be done. Why do it now? And I would say it is a lot like what we did in 2008, and what it helps with is it helps with our planning at MnDOT. The department plans 20 years out, it plans a 10-year out, and it plans a 4-year plan to program. And so if we do not have a good idea of what is coming in terms of those resources, it makes it very difficult, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, to program out that 10-year plan. And I know that many of you have now received the illustrative list of projects that could be delivered in the next 10 years. It's also up on the MnDOT website for everyone by Senate District. That is exactly what we're talking about here.
Thank you, Commissioner. Follow-up, Representative Torkelson, or did that answer your question?
No, just a comment. It's not only MnDOT that likes to plan.
All right. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Shetnin.
Good morning, members. I'm Judd Shetnin with the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. Our chair, Slawik, is currently on a tour of the D-line with a number of local elected officials, and unfortunately she's not able to be here, so I will pinch hit for her, and I'll also be very brief. I'd like to thank Chair Hornstein for his bill, and I'd like to just talk briefly about what we think about it. So there are some similarities and differences between the governor's bill and the House bill, but they both recognize the importance of investing in a transit and transitway system. For our region to grow, prosper, and remain economically competitive, investments in transit are critical. We appreciate that you share this vision with us. Regarding Metro Mobility, your recognition of the program's growth that has put pressure on our current funding structure is also very much appreciated. By providing the program its own appropriation and base funding into the next biennium, you have mirrored the governor's recommendation, and we appreciate that as well. We feel that this change in approach is vital to keep the regular route bus system healthy and growing while fully funding our regular route bus service and the Metro Mobility mandated service. I'd also like to thank the committee for including the regional transit capital bonds that Representative Joachim has, the GANS amendment that Representative Torkelson put on that amendment, and also this morning, as Representative Kosnick mentioned, while it's not in this bill, it's critical for our future, is the ability for us to do the data sharing, and we passed that out of the Judiciary Committee this morning, and so we're very happy to see that move forward. And with that, I'd just like to mention that we are looking forward to working with you and the chair as we move these bills forward, and I'll stand for any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Shetnin, for being with us today. You know, a big piece of this bill is a half-cent increase in sales tax that goes to Met Council generally. Can you describe the impact on individual citizens of that half-cent increase in sales tax?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I had that exchange with Mr. Marvel this morning. I'm going to have to talk to the Department of Revenue to get that information for you. I can hopefully get that for you this afternoon. But I got that request about 10 o'clock last night, and I just don't have it with me yet, but I can certainly try to turn that around very quickly about what the half-cent might look like. Your fiscal analyst, Mr. Lee, may be able to help with that as well, but I apologize. I don't have that with me right now.
Representative Torkelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps the chair of the author of the bill would like to comment on the expected impact of that increased sales tax.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I can talk about the impact. I'm more familiar with how it'll improve our transit system, but I don't, you know, there's a lot of data points in terms of who's spending, on purchases, where they're coming from. Is it, within the state? Is it within the region? What are they spending things on? I think I would defer to, Mr. Lee or people that have a little bit more expertise on the macro and microeconomics of the spending habits of our region. So I think it would be difficult to answer that right now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't go into any more detail. I just note how we all know how regressive the sales tax is and how it impacts people, everybody, no matter what your income level is, as a percentage of your income, it impacts those with the smallest incomes the most.
Representative Kazi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shetnan, or the author, coming from Dakota County, we spent a lot of time with the previous joint powers agreement of CTIB, the county's transit improvement board. We spent a lot of time trying to get our way out of there because we didn't feel it was equitable. And so other counties that are maybe weren't a part of that might want to proceed with caution. How does the new sales tax of a 0.5% increase across all the metro, how does that, the dynamics and structure that differ from CTIB?
Chair Hornstein.
I think it differs in some significant ways, Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick. This is going to be allocated regionally. There were several counties that were not, part of the CTIB arrangement. We are at a very different place now with our transit infrastructure needs in 2019 than we were in 2008. We have growing suburbs that are in need of both express bus and local routes, dial-a-ride services, metro mobility. So we have a growing region. We have 720,000 people coming in the next 20 years. We have heard a lot about suburb to suburb, 169 express bus service. Everybody, it's not just a Hennepin and Ramsey need. And in fact, I would argue that regionally there are many unmet needs in places such as where you are. And, the Orange Line, I think, will be a very significant boost to Dakota County. We have to continue to operate that. We have to continue to find ways that people can connect with that beyond. We have issues around what about people who live more than a mile away from a transit stop or a park and ride? How do we get people around? So, this is a very, very critical part of a regional transportation system. And so imposing this regionally is important. And I think the fact that we're dividing this up so that the second quarter cent is done through the TAB makes it really, I think, expands the use of this tax, and it expands the kinds of projects that can be funded. So we set aside money for bike ped, for example. We just had somebody that was killed across the street from the Capitol. So pedestrian and bike options are very, very important. So it makes it more comprehensive than anything we've done in the past, and it really looks forward in terms of the regional need.
Representative Kazi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments, Chair Hornstein. I think we're missing a point, though, that counties like Dakota or Scott County
we had our regional rail authority own sales tax ability to raise and utilize for our own transportation and transit needs. I think Scott County utilized their full half-cent authority. I commend Dakota County because they are meeting their transportation needs with their own process rather than the state mandating to them. And we haven't utilized our full taxing authority for transportation and taxes yet. We're still at 0.25%. I like to say we're 25% better and cheaper than neighboring counties. But the point being is that when it's appropriate for Dakota County to utilize additional revenue to meet needs, they made big investments in planning and doing that and not utilizing their full authority yet. This is kind of stepping over ahead of them and kind of cutting their knees out by imposing this on them where previously they had and they do have a plan and will meet the needs of their own community. And
Representative Kozik, today let's keep to clarifying questions and understanding exactly what's in the bill, and then as we get to markup on Thursday, Friday, if you want to go into Saturday, we totally can.
That's a good point.
But let's keep this today to clarifying questions and shorter clarifying questions, please.
Very good point. Point taken. And if there was anything else that the Met Council wants to say, it differs from mechanically. I'd be interested in that. Otherwise, we can wait. Thank you.
Thank you. Shit. Anything else? All right. Nope. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered if. If Mr. Shettinen would do us the favor, because when your budget was presented in November to the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Governance, obviously the numbers were vastly lower than they are now with the new sources of funding. So if you would please provide for us Met Council's total budget, showing all of the lines of funding sources, which make it, of course, extremely complicated for anybody on the outside to understand. So. That would be something you could do. I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I'd be happy to do that, and I think I can turn that around pretty quickly for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a clarifying question.
I appreciate
for Mr. Shettinen. On page 14 and on to 15 of the bill, there's a subparagraph relating to use of reserves. I don't think I need to read it. I think you'll kind of get the just here. It requires you to spend your reserves down to amount 10% over. How much money will you be required to spend to get down to that level?
Ms. Shettinen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, right now I believe we have about $55 million in reserve. We plan to spend some of that in 2019, so I think that would mean about $48 million that we would have to spend down above that reserve. I will mention that one of the reasons why we have that level of reserve is because we intentionally were holding back funds because, as folks know, we have a structural deficit in bus. We also have a structural deficit in metro mobility. And one of the things that we appreciate about the governor's bill and that we also appreciate about Representative Hornstein's bill and the House bill here is that it moves metro mobility over to its own line appropriation and it funds it. And one of the reasons why we need to maintain those reserves is in case that structural deficit isn't fixed, we need to keep those reserves, move them over so that it doesn't bite into the regular out bus category. So we did that very intentionally. And the language here that if this bill were to pass, we'd be happy to spend on those reserves because we know that we'd have a sustainable funding source moving forward. So that's a great question, Representative Torkelson, and that is that's where we're at. And I know we're going to have a visit about the reserves as well, I believe, tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll discuss these reserve issues in the future. I just wanted to make sure we identified the amount of money involved, and we'll talk about how we got there sometime down the road.
Thank you for the clarifying question, Representative Torkelson. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shettinen. We are now going to move on to Ramsey County Commissioner McDonough, followed by Bruce Miller, followed by Margaret Donahoe. Commissioner McDonough, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim McDonough, and I chair the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. In summary, we support the balanced package you have put forward with the Delete Everything Amendment. I want to congratulate you on a bold and comprehensive, balanced and sustainable package. And it is evident that you put a lot of thought into this package and are making it work for our roads, bridges, and transit system. You do not have an easy job. The 20 cents is a bold but necessary step to pay back the general fund appropriations from last year. Indexing the gas tax to inflation brings stability and allows for long-term planning. Increasing the vehicle registration tax is important. It's an important dedicated funding source to use. Bonding dollars are always important and a critical piece of advancing infrastructure investment in our region and state. Lastly, I want to thank you for finding a way to bring Hennepin and Ramsey County back into the lease vehicle motor sales tax. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for your work ahead in the weeks to come. Ramsey County is ready to partner with the House, the Senate, and the Governor to pass a comprehensive, balanced, sustainable roads, bridges, and transit bill.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Miller is up next, so I appreciate you being here. And before we get to that, Mr. Burris has, if everyone got this sheet, that's a flow chart. Mr. Burris would like to explain quickly how a flow chart works, just so everyone understands.
Mr. Chair and members, just a couple of comments on this flow chart. Representative Torkelson had asked about getting a visual sense of the flow of some of the fees. This chart provides some illustrative type examples of scenarios, so it doesn't show all forms of tax and fee on motor vehicle and driver's license transactions, but does give you a sense of the major fee-based revenue changes, and that's in bold and italics on the amounts under the delete all amendment. So you see that in a couple of the boxes. One other thing I would note is that most of the tax and fee categories are what exist under current law. The technology surcharge would be reinstated under the bill, but a lot of the structure is reflective of current law. And then the changes are provided as estimated revenue amounts for in biennial terms, so the 2021 biennium.
Perfect. Thank you. This will be great information for our discussions tomorrow. Mr. Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bruce Miller with the Minnesota Farmers Union. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, for having this hearing today. We are here in general support of this bill. We know that roads and bridges, their repair and their replacement, is an important part of keeping rural Minnesota healthy. Now, we've kicked this can of repair and replacement down the road so far, we're kind of afraid it's going to fall into a pothole out there and not be seen again. But, you know, at this point, you know, when I think about it, the first automobile was first introduced and brought to Minnesota in 1895. In 1909, there were 7,065 vehicles registered in the state. And we just heard the commissioner tell us now that there are 4.9 million cars, and those cars are driving over a billion miles a year. You know, a couple of months ago, gasoline was at $2.17 a gallon. This morning in Brooklyn Park, it's $2.46. That 29-cent jump occurred without anybody really talking about it or without any news coverage. And now all of the focus seems to be here on a gas tax. You know, if it takes a gas tax to improve and work on our roads and bridges in rural Minnesota, we are supporting that. Because, you know, when it comes right down to it, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hornstein, this is not just about roads and bridges. This is a bill about people. This is a bill about Eric in Benton County driving his hops to the Twin Cities. This is about Lisa and Avon driving her eggs to St. Joseph. This is about Richard and Bob out in Redwood Falls driving their corn and beans to the market. This is about Katie down in Houston County driving her cheese to the Lund stores in Minneapolis. This is about John in Watonwan County driving his semi-loads of corn to the market. This is about Cindy and Josh out in Kirkhoven and Chippewa County bringing their meats down to the grocery stores and the co-ops of the Twin Cities. This is about Ann in Browns Valley, who's bringing her meat to customers in the Twin Cities. This is about Mark up in Carlton County bringing his livestock to slaughter and processing. This is about Brian in Monoman County who's taking his grain to the market. And this is about my sister Marie, living out in Stearns County, Pope County, actually, and driving 45 miles each day on a 31-mile road trip over town, county, state, and federal highways to get to work. This is about people going to church. This is about people going to school. This is about people getting on with their daily lives. We think it's important for this bill to move forward. We're going to be working with our partners at the counties and the townships and with you to make this a better bill as we move forward. We know this is the beginning, and we're happy to be here to say we're willing to support this, and we want to remind ourselves and everyone else here that what we're concerned about is building the roads and the bridges, and then what's it cost is over here. Let's not start with the cost. Let's start with the need and move towards the cost that it takes. I'm always reminded when I talk about bills like this that this bill is not perfect, but that the enemy of good is perfect. And we would like to see a good bill, a good transportation bill, that takes care of the roads and bridges of rural Minnesota adequately and in necessary fashion. And so, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we really thank you for this opportunity to express our support for this bill as we move it forward down the road. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. Next up, we have Ms. Donahoe, followed by Steve Kramer, the Downtown Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Thank you, Chairman Hornstein, for putting together a really strong funding package that addresses so many needs on our transportation system all across the state. Increases in constitutionally dedicated revenue sources will provide ongoing stable funding for many decades to come. And indexing the current per gallon fuel tax will allow that revenue to grow just as all sales taxes do. I want to thank you for including language that ensures that $300 million of the $2 billion in trunk highway bonds will be directed to the Corridors of Commerce program. We do think that this is very important. And the chair, I know when you created that program, had a real interest in corridors that go from two lanes to four lanes to two lanes, which creates a very real safety hazard. And in looking at corridors that are really important for freight movement, there is a list of Corridors of Commerce programs. Everyone has seen that. It's been vetted. And communities really support those projects. So we really appreciate you keeping that program funded. We would prefer to see the $32 million in leased vehicle sales tax revenue continue to be dedicated to transportation rather than going back to the general fund. It is such a small drop in the bucket of the general fund budget, but it really makes a big difference for maintaining the local bridge program, for funding Greater Minnesota Transit, and being able to do that without changing the 60-40 split between highways and transit of the MVEST. Minnesota's transportation system continues to face major deficits and a backlog of needed projects. And you all heard about a lot of those projects in the field hearings. But also just this session, legislators, including you all, have introduced bills requesting over $1.2 billion in funding for projects and programs that are currently unfunded. So the need is certainly out there. Transit systems are continuing to struggle to replace old buses and maintain service and meet the demand of an aging population. We know that these projects and these needs are not going away. They will simply become more expensive, and we will see even more of a backlog of need. Doing nothing really does have a cost. And we've watched the fatalities increase in 2018 over 2017 on our highways. We really know that something needs to be done this session. We urge you to work with the governor and your colleagues in the Senate to get something done this session and not pass just another status quo two-year transportation budget bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. And so we have some folks who are going to speak this afternoon instead of today. So next up, we have Mr. Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity, followed by Bentley Graves of the State Chamber. Oh, well, that doesn't work then. Is Mr. Graves here? Thought I saw. Yeah, there we go. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce supports a safe, reliable, efficient, and multimodal transportation system to ensure businesses are able to get their goods to market and their customers and their employees to their door. We agree that additional investment is needed to improve the state's transportation system, and we are pleased that in 2017 we made important progress on this investment, working alongside Governor Dayton, the legislature, and many other stakeholders. In the current biennium, funding for transportation has increased at a rate of just over $100 million per year. That's equal to about a 3-cent gas tax increase. Starting July 1 of this year, when the new biennium begins, that will increase to a rate of more than $200 million a year, equal to about a 6-to-7-cent gas tax increase. These sizable funding increases are already on the books. Increased investment is happening. And while we appreciate efforts in this bill to bring more resources into the system, we cannot support it. The gas tax is one of the few state-imposed taxes where Minnesota is competitive nationally. This bill would raise it to one of the highest in the nation, joining a list of many other business taxes where we are already a national outlier. And this proposed gas tax increase sits alongside a House tax target that will likely push some of these same taxes higher still. Employers don't have the luxury of looking at these and other proposed tax increases in a vacuum. Before we consider raising a tax like the gas tax where Minnesota is competitive nationally, we need to make progress in bringing down some of the other business taxes that already put us at the top of national rankings. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Rembeck.
Could I get a quick comment from you from the chamber regarding the indexing that's in the bill, the automatic increasing to a rate of inflation equivalent to the National Highway Cost Construction Index?
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rembeck, we always have concerns about automatic tax increases, which, you know, indexing would essentially be. We would much prefer to get the rest of the sales tax on auto parts into the transportation system because that's a funding source that's going to grow naturally over time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. All right, next up we have Mr. Flores. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Flores. I'm the state director for the Minnesota chapter of Americans for Prosperity. On behalf of our activists across the state of Minnesota, some of whom are joining us here in the committee room today, I am here today to voice our opposition to House File 1555, which includes over $1 billion of new gas taxes, sales taxes, and licensing fees that will hurt Minnesota families and make Minnesota a less competitive place to do business. At a time when the state is already projecting to overcharge taxpayers for more than $1 billion in revenues above budget, now is not the time to raise taxes on anything. The governor's proposal for a 20-cent per gallon increase in the state's gas tax equates to a roughly 70% increase and would vault our taxes to fourth highest in the nation. Even worse, as we just discussed, that gas tax would be set to increase with inflation, automatically taking more money from taxpayers every year without any additional accountability from future legislatures in how those dollars are spent. Now, in regards to comments about states like South Dakota raising their gas tax, I would just note that South Dakota has neither a personal income tax nor corporate income tax. So if this body would like to match our neighbor to the west on taxes, I'm sure you'll want to eliminate those taxes as well. Then we can compare apples to apples. These tax and fee increases would hurt worse those Minnesotans already struggling to make ends meet. According to the Department of Revenue's tax incident study, new gas tax and transportation taxes will disproportionately hurt lower-income Minnesotans. And that pain's not just at the pump. It raises the cost of every single item that they would buy at the grocery store, at Target, at any other store, and impacts business inputs for small businesses and large industries alike. Now, while Minnesotans will feel the pain of a 20-cent gas tax increase, they will only reap the benefit of about half of that. While the governor is raising taxes with one hand, with the other, he's shifting general fund dollars currently dedicated to transportation toward other programs. It's just a shell game. The first 6.8 cents of this 20 cent per gallon increase gets us nothing. It just replaces current funding. Then another portion goes to additional tax credits to offset or compensate for the additional taxes that we're putting on Minnesotans. We're also concerned that, according to the legislative auditor, the dollars we're already spending in transportation aren't being spent very efficiently on a financial, from a financial standpoint. It's our hope that this body reject House File 1555 and focus instead on reforms that will protect Minnesota workers and taxpayers and deliver better results without digging deeper into their pockets. Thank you for the time today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Flores. I didn't give a bullpen here. Sorry about that. Next up, we have Sherry Munyon from Greater Minnesota Transit and Abby Burdick from Minnesota Asphalt Paving Association. Ms. Munyon.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm representing the Minnesota Public Transit Association, a statewide professional association founded in 1975. MIPTA advocates for high-quality service that is accessible, available to people in communities, both large and small, urban, suburban, rural, to achieve a statewide balanced system. Demand is growing for a number of reasons, including population and employment growth, increasing number of seniors, more congestion, higher driving costs, environmental concerns, and the availability of business transit incentives. People across the state are requesting more service when employment growth in regional centers and aging populations. While we are pleased to see that today all counties now have some public transit service, it's also important to note that in many cases this is only in one or two cities, not complete countywide transit service. In addition, our large urban systems such as Duluth and Rochester have the same pressures for meeting the ADA requirements as the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The amount of service in Greater Minnesota Transit can provide is closely tied to the amount of funding provided by the state. In 2017, state funding covered approximately 65% of the transit system operating costs. In addition, Greater Minnesota is facing pressure by the loss of their volunteer drivers. For a variety of reasons, in the last 3 years, there has been a change and increase in insurance costs that are driving our volunteers away. As one quick example, I'll provide a system that uses a volunteer, and the cost would be $38.28 for a day of volunteer driving, getting somebody to their medical appointment. But if that driver doesn't exist, the cost translates into $163.50 to have a for-hire carrier. My time is short. I'm getting the high sign. In addition, we're working on local five-year transit plans, working with MnDOT, and the bill that provides additional funding for Greater Minnesota makes a significant move forward to implement those plans for both operating and capital costs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Kosnick has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, in the Metro, it's being proposed to increase the sales tax for transit needs. Is that something that would be supported in Greater Minnesota as well?
Ms. Munyon.
Greater Minnesota, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative, Greater Minnesota Transit does support additional funding for the metropolitan area as well. And they have in the past legislative sessions taken a position in support of the sales tax.
Representative Costa.
Mr. Chair, to clarify the question, would you support a sales tax increase in Greater Minnesota similar to what is being proposed to the Metro?
Ms. Munyon.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a position on that today. However, in the past, we have supported a statewide sales tax, thinking that in some instances it would provide greater equity. Because right now our Greater Minnesota systems each locally bear the responsibility and property tax burden individually rather than collectively. And some communities cannot make it on their own.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next up we have Ms. Burdick from the Minnesota Asphalt Paving Association. Is she here? Nope. All right. So we are going to move on to Dave Brown from the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainings, followed by Mr. John Abbott of Minnesota Regional Railroad Association.
Hey.
Mr. Brown, please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Dave Brown. I'm representing the oldest rail union in the country at 156 years of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I'm here in support of this bill. Three particular items, 894, 286, and 1179. I'll start off with the North Star. As I am still working on the North Star, I've been working on the railroad for over 48 years. And I think I speak best when I say that we need to finish this line. We need to allow the rural communities up in St. Cloud the opportunity to have the fast transit that Big Lake and Eastward have. And it wouldn't take much. We do a push-pull operation. We don't need to wire the trains. We go in one direction and we just change ends and we go back the other direction. It'd be quick and easy. It's just one addition to Big Lake to put a second rail into that the east end, the west end of the platform there at Big Lake. I'm in support of 894 to clarify the state's responsibility with the state rail inspector. I believe that gives the Department of Transportation and those men and women that that work as state rail inspectors the clarity to enforce and prove the enhancing capabilities that they have for our safety. These are real issues that we demand that safety is a priority, which we have been battling for 156 years. There now, 286 is a two-person crew bill that we support it wholeheartedly because we don't want the public to have to be the experiment to have the justifications the carriers to state that a one-person crew is as safe as a two-person crew. I'm here to tell you that I've been doing this for a long time, at 48 years, and I wouldn't want to be up there by myself. This is a operation that when I hit somebody on a crossing, they're either going to die or they're going to be very maimed. I open up cars, I open up trucks like a tin can. When I hit what I drive and what I operate hits a object like that, there's going to be mayhem. And I just want to thank Chairman Hornstein for putting this bill together. And we need to improve our state's roads and improve the safety of the public.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next up, we have Mr. Abbott, followed by Barbara Leinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Abbott. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer. We represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, which is the 20 railroads that operate here in Minnesota, both the four large ones and the 16 smaller railroads that move freight across the state. And obviously, transportation is a vital component of a healthy economy. We all have that pretty much squared in mind. That's why we're all sitting here. Railroads are an important part of that transportation system. We move about 25% of everything that comes in and goes out of the state of Minnesota. And we move that freight safely. Railroad operations are safe and they're getting safer. And that's why we oppose two of the particular provisions that are in this bill, Section 60 and Section 63. We'd ask that you consider taking them out. But you don't have to if you don't want to either. You've heard Section 63 deals with the two-person crew and Section 60 deals with the rail inspectors, which Mr. Brown just talked about. Let me give you the flip side of that coin just real quickly, if I might. You've heard our concerns previously, but I'll be very quick. With regard to the two-person crew mandate, let me simply say that this is a collective bargaining issue. It is not a safety issue. There's plenty of evidence, and we brought it before you, that railroads are safe and getting safer, and that with reductions in crew size over the past 40 years, that has continued to be the case. Think about it for just a minute. If this legislature or another legislature had mandated a five-person crew 40 years ago, when negotiations with regard to crew size began, we'd probably still be operating with five-person crews, and we might not have a rail industry in the state of Minnesota. The other issue is the one with regard to rail inspectors. The railroads pay for these inspectors. They pay for four inspectors currently, and the bill would provide for an additional two inspectors to be paid for by the railroad industry. I suggested when we had testimony earlier that if indeed department was interested in these, they probably would have asked for them. They're not in the budget. They're not in the governor's budget. And we've already got 100 rail inspectors and more operating for the railroads in the state of Minnesota. Thank you ever so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. All right, next up we have Barbara Leinert, followed by Shane Zart. Ms. Leinert, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Leinert. I live in Eagan with my husband. We have a residential construction business. We specialize in finished carpentry, but we also do remodeling. Last year, when business was slow, we even took on the job of building a chicken coop. We do what we can to stay in business. I'm here to ask you to please vote no on a gas tax increase. Last year, gasoline was our biggest expense item after salaries. Driving trucks to and from job sites all across the metro area, hauling tools, hauling equipment, hauling building supplies. Last year, every year, our business purchases thousands of gallons of gasoline. We are a small business. We operate on a slim profit margin. Any increase in our expenses, like a gas tax increase, will have to be passed on to our customers. They think that's true of every business across the state of Minnesota. Minnesotans are going to end up paying more, not just at the gas pump, but for their groceries, for their clothing, for their new deck, for their houses, for their family room addition, even for their chicken coop. Please vote no. There's plenty of money in the budget to fix the potholes and the railroad crossings. We can't afford this gas tax increase. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leinert. Next up, we have Mr. Zart, followed by Mr. Broom and Schreyers, please. Oh, we will have Laura Ziegler following Mr. Zart. Please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Shane Zart. I'm with Flaherty and Hood and testifying today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which is a group of 97 cities located outside of the seven-county metro area. Our organization has long supported additional dedicated funding for revenues, including increases to the fuel tax, and because our top transportation priority is dedicated funding for city streets, we're particularly pleased to see funding for those cities under 5,000 in population that have historically been left out of the equation when it comes to dedicated revenues be a historic investment in small city transportation. We're pleased to see that in the bill. And pleased to see the significant additional revenues that would flow to cities over 5,000 through the MSA formula. And also, because so many of our members are passionate about highway safety and expansion projects across the state, while imperfect in its current state, the Corridors of Commerce program has been the only mechanism in recent years to address and make progress on some of those projects. We're pleased to see additional funding in the bill for that as well. I think it's safe to say that in the past 6 years, that program has helped make more progress on some of those projects than had been made in decades previous to that. So there's a lot of projects out there waiting that weren't gotten to in the 17 and 18 funding, so we're pleased to see that in the bill. And pleased to see the investments made in Greater Minnesota Transit. As you heard from a previous testifier, those needs in Greater Minnesota will only continue to increase in the coming years. So I'll end on it just by noting our top priority outside of transportation is the local government aid program, and because of that, the stability of the general fund is always one of our top priorities as it supports the LGA program. So we're pleased to see that this proposal relies on existing dedicated revenue sources and keeps that pressure off the general fund. So thank you today for bringing this bill forward, for the opportunity to testify, and stand for any questions if there are any.
Thank you. And Representative Kosnick has a question.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And
kind of a similar question. Does the coalition, are they in favor of a sales tax increase to fund some of your priorities in greater Minnesota, similar to what's being proposed for the metro only?
Yeah, Mr. Zart.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, our position does have our coalition does have a position in support of local option sales taxes to fund local roads. I know there's been increased discussion about that in recent years and, as an option, but with counties now being able to levy local option sales taxes to support their road infrastructure, I think cities across the state are looking at options, similar options to support their local roads, just because without sufficient support from the state in recent years, they've had to start looking at what other options might be available.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sartre. Next, we have Ms. Ziegler from the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, and then we'll go back to Ms. Braddock from Minnesota Asphalt Paving Association. Ms. Ziegler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Ziegler. I'm here on behalf of Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. We're a statewide organization, and we are the oldest and largest construction association in the state, celebrating our centennial year. Our members build highways, bridges, transit systems across the state. I want to touch on three items briefly that we support in House File 1555. First of all, the overall increased investment in transportation is good for workers and for our companies. We talk about jobs in construction a lot, that X project will create so many jobs. What's also important to note is that this is an investment in careers, high quality, good paying careers. And right now there is a good value in the marketplace with interest rates low. And of course, we have a very reliable contractor community here in our state. The new revenue will take time to deliver in MnDOT's program, and that time allows for our businesses to plan for their own investments. For example, they may decide to buy a piece of heavy equipment versus renting it if they know that there is a project flow in place. And specifically, we do appreciate the $300 million dedicated towards the Corridors of Commerce program. We know that this program considers geographical areas and allows for strong investments in those areas that meet the criteria. Secondly, thank you for including Representative Cagle's bill in Article 6, Section 35, that seeks to enhance work zone safety. I'm very pleased to report that the other body has also supported this provision. It has bipartisan support. Certainly, safety is on everyone in the work zone, and there are efforts made every day on behalf of workers to mitigate these dangers, but we do need the legislature to step in here, and we want to thank you for that. And finally, to wrap up my comments, EGC is deeply appreciative of Article 6, Section 7, a bill that was carried by Representative Albright to dedicate a portion of a highway near the city of Jordan as the Richard Ames Memorial Highway. As you heard in committee, he was a leader in the construction industry through his innovative company and was a pillar in the community. And so not just here in Minnesota, but also across the country. And it is so fitting and very deeply humbling to the Ames and AGC family that he be remembered in this way. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the inclusion of these provisions in your bill. We know there's lots of conversation ahead, and AGC appreciates the entire committee's time and consideration to these issues.
Thank you, Ms. Ziegler. Next up, we have Ms. Braddock, followed by Commissioner Vance Sternberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Abby Braddock. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. We represent asphalt producers and pavers for over 65 years. I'm not sure if anyone has noticed the bumper crop of potholes that we've had this spring, but this is not only because of the low winter temperatures we've had and the freeze and thaw cycles we've experienced this winter. This is an indication of poorly maintained roads. A well-maintained road should not develop potholes. As many of you know, our transportation system is woefully underfunded. We have raised our main funding source, the gas tax, only twice in 30 years. While other sources have been suggested and supported in the past, our constitutionally dedicated sources are the absolute best way to fund our system. The main reason, from an industry perspective, as Ms. Ziegler also just mentioned, is because of efficiencies. We know when funding is coming, we can invest in our businesses, invest in our workforce, and plan for the future. When funding comes in fits and starts, when money has limitations through bonding or must be spent on certain projects or be spent in a certain amount of time, projects become more expensive and the dollars don't stretch as far. One element of the bill I'd like to point out as particularly helpful is the inflator on the gas tax is tied to the National Highway Construction Cost Index rather than the CPI or the Consumer Price Index. This really gets at the Achilles heel of the gas tax, which is that its purchasing power is eroded year after year. This will more directly tie the revenue coming in to the cost of road construction, which is strongly correlated to the cost of construction materials such as oil, steel, lumber, et cetera. I'd also like to thank the author, as did Ms. Ziegler, for including the work zone safety measures that were included in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for supporting our transportation system.
Thank you very much, and my apologies for butchering your name in the beginning. Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Commissioner Sternberg, followed by Tam Winton from the Minnesota Telecoms Alliance.
Morning. My name is Vance Stunberg. I'm a county commissioner down in Blue Earth County, down in Mankato. I'm also the chair of the Association of Minnesota Counties Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. As an organization that represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties, we have long advocated for the statewide need for increased transportation dollars. One of our top priorities this year is to support a comprehensive transportation funding bill that includes new dedicated revenue for roads, bridges, and transit. Over 25 counties, and actually I heard this morning now it's up to 41 counties, have passed resolutions in support of transportation funding in the last few weeks, and we hope to get as close to 87 as possible. For many years, we supported an all-of-the-above approach to finding solutions for transportation funding, which has included supporting increases in the constitutionality of dedicated funding sources. We ultimately believe the solution should be a comprehensive, balanced, sustainable, and dedicated funding. We support the increase in three constitutionally dedicated funding sources found in this proposal. The increased funding going to the CASA formula will go far to address the needs of the county system. We also appreciate the increased funding for both Metro and Greater Minnesota Transit in this proposal. Finally, I'll mention that we would like to see the first $32 million from the motor vehicle leased sales tax revenue continue to go towards transportation. In 2017, a portion of this money was dedicated to the local bridge replacement program, and which is removed in this proposal. Local agencies have identified 767 bridges for replacement in 2019 and 2020, with a total estimate replacement cost of over $417 million. This portion of the lease sales tax revenue allows for state aid and local agencies to have a continued funding source beyond bonding that addresses local bridge needs. On behalf of AMC, I want to thank Chair Hornstein for his commitment to transportation and his work in the funding proposal. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. See no questions, so thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Going to move on to Cam Winton of the Minnesota Telecom Association, followed by Stephen Huser of Metro Cities, and then we will have some quick words from Chair Hornstein and recess at for an hour or so, hopefully. Let's see. Is Cam Winton here? All right. We'll move on to Stephen Huser then.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Stephen Huser and I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities supports several provisions included in House File 1555, the House Transportation Omnibus Bill, and we would like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for the work that's gone into the bill so far. Metro Cities policy supports a comprehensive multimodal transportation system. Metro Cities also strongly supports stable and sufficient statewide transportation funding and expanded local tools to meet the street and transit system needs of the region and local systems. Metro City supports the increase to municipal state aid street funding included in this bill and appreciates the inclusion of dedicated funding for the small cities assistance account. Further, Metro City supports the funding for transit operating and capital costs included in this legislation. Metro City supports the funding allocation for Metro Mobility included in this proposal and appreciates the inclusion of funding for deputy registrar reimbursements. Metro Cities continues to support the creation and funding of a large cities account, a local cost participation account, and also supports local street funding tools such as street improvement districts, and would encourage the committee to consider the inclusion of these funding tools. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Huser. And since we have a little time, we'll have Mr. Benner from Ask Me Council 5. And this will be our last testifier of the morning. Mr. Benner.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Benner. I'm with AFSCME Council 5. AFSCME is pleased to support House File 1555 as it presents the vision to move Minnesota's transportation system into the 21st century. Just as importantly, this proposal doesn't rob the general fund to do it. It raises $2.6 billion in the next biennium and $4.8 billion in the following one and transfers out of the high... And the transfers out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund to the general fund would actually grow the general fund by about $500 million. This plan is ambitious in its scope, but ambition is what it takes to fix our network of degrading roads and bridges, which is one of the largest in the country. More specifically, AFSCME supports the chair's proposal to not only match the governor's proposal to increase operations and maintenance spending at MnDOT from the base, but actually surpass it by a little under $20 million in the next biennium and an additional $40 million in the following biennium. This will significantly increase the capacity of MnDOT to repair our infrastructure and eat into the expected deficit for maintenance rather than watch it grow. We also support various smaller provisions in the bill that will improve road safety and help our members deal with future harsh winters like the one we just had. For instance, in Article 6, Section 57 of the Omnibus Bill, allowing MnDOT to create a snow and ice contingency where there are cost overruns in a bad winter will prevent a situation where our members have to plow snow and they can't drop salt or brine because they've run out. We're also happy that House File 1408 was included in the Omnibus Bill, which will increase penalties for those who ignore directions of flaggers in work zones. Hopefully this, along with other safety-first bills like the hands-free law, the move-over bill, and driver's licenses for all, will reduce the number of accidents on our highways and protect our members whose lives are on the line, as well as those who share the roads, like bicyclists and pedestrians. We also appreciate the incorporation of the Officer Joe Gott Memorial Highway. This is the transportation and transit bill that Minnesota needs, and it is paid for with a sustainable, constitutionally dedicated source of new revenue. AFSCME urges the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benner. And Representative Petersburg has a question, a quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just before I came to this committee, we were in the tax committee in which we heard about some progressive tax increases. Your counterpart, Max Hall from AFSCME 5, there said that AFSCME really supported progressive tax increases because they think that's the proper way to go. Here you're supporting a very regressive tax increase. Can you help us with kind of, it seems like opposing comments there?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, we do often support progressive tax increases. That is true. This is a situation where we need to fix the roads and bridges. There aren't a lot of great alternatives. at this point. We do have a user fee through the gas tax, and that, I mean, for those who are using the roads and degrading the roads should be the ones who help pay for it. It is not perfect and not necessarily ideal, but is the one that we have to use moving forward because the deficit's getting too big to handle.
Thank you, Mr. Benner. All right. I appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here. We will continue testimony. Just give me one second. We'll continue testimony this afternoon, hopefully at 12:45 or at the call of the chair, and we will be in room 10 in the state office building this afternoon. Like I said, hopefully at 12:45, room 10 in the state office building. Representative Hausman.
And that was partly my clarification. For those of us who have other committees, will there be any votes taken in during that?
There will not be any votes taken. This is taking public testimony on the bill. All right. Chair Hornstein, do you have any final words?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I really especially want to thank the testifiers and the public. I want to thank members on the other side of the aisle for, you know, the very helpful questions, I think, offered in a spirit of civility and substance, and look forward to continuing the discussion and the dialogue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are recessed until 12:45 or the call of the chair in room 10, SOB.
All right, everyone, we will pull back in to reconvene the Transportation Finance and Policy Division meeting. We have a hard stop in this room now at 2:15, so we're going to get through all of the public testimony that we have today and move forward from there. And if anybody here who is not currently on the list, need to speak with John here to get things moving. So we are going to first start, we'll stick with the same format as we are doing over in the 120 Capitol building. Everyone will have 2 minutes, and whoever is speaking, please keep your eyes on me. I'll help make sure to cut you off at the 2 minutes. I don't have to gavel you down. It's easier that way. So thank you, and we're going to give a few extra minutes to Commissioner John Harrington, who is up first, to speak about Department of Public Safety, since it's an agency of the Transportation and Policy, Finance Policy Division. And Commissioner Harrington, I believe, is on his way down. Perfect. And after Commissioner Harrington is Hennepin County Commissioner Mike Opat. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
And if you could please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. All right. My name is John Harrington, and I am the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and I will probably leave you a minute on the table. So we have enjoyed our work with the committee, and in particular working with the chair. The House's budget recognizes our need for continued investment in the driver and vehicle services. It supports us in getting additional funding for technology, DVS staffing, and registrars, and we are greatly appreciative of that as we continue to try and move MNLARS and FAST down the road. It also recognizes the need we have for increased security at the Capitol and to help us make up for the deficiency in the soft body armor account. We look forward to continuing to have this discussion and continue our work with the committee and with the chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Do we have any questions for the commissioner? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. That was amazing, by the way. Thank you. All right, now we have Hennepin County Commissioner Mike Opat, followed by Steve Kramer from the Downtown Council. Commissioner Opat, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Opat, Hennepin County Commissioner. Again, I'll be on the same theme as the Chief. We have greatly appreciated working with the Chair and the committee on the bill and the drafting of the bill. Particularly, we are grateful for the inclusion of the BOTNO limited liability provision that's been included. The motor vehicle lease sales tax changes to include Hennepin and Ramsey, we appreciate that. The GANS provision is included for that, again, goes to the Met Council's effort to get Southwest Light Rail done. We continue to evaluate the original sales tax for transit proposed by the governor and the increased version proposed by the chair. And that's because we are huge supporters of transit, as I think everyone knows, but our half cent that we voted on is already going exclusively to transit within Hennepin County, and it's actually gone farther than Hennepin County in the days of CTIB. So we continue to evaluate that. It's just we have concerns about equity of transit. It's not even equitable within the county, let alone when we get to the other six metro counties. So, but we are always willing to discuss the matter and really do truly appreciate the efforts of the committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we have Steve Kramer followed by Jonathan Weinhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Steve Kramer. I'm the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Downtown Council. Our 500-member businesses, on average, see 40% of their workforce arrive for work and depart every day via transit. The world-class sports and entertainment venues, which draw millions of fans and patrons to downtown Minneapolis each year, depend on our transit system. And the connection between MSP Airport and downtown via transit is one of the fastest and easiest to navigate airport to commercial center connections in the nation, one that will serve thousands of fans later this week as they arrive for Final Four weekend. So for all of those reasons and more, growing the network of multimodal transit options available to our region has long been a key goal of our organization. We're also supportive of ensuring Metro Transit and other systems enjoy steady and reliable funding for their day-to-day operations. Our essential mission as a business association is to help ensure a vibrant and competitive environment for job and population growth in Minnesota's largest central business district. Transportation and transit investments and improvements are a key factor for success in achieving this mission. In fact, leading the nation in transportation options is one of the 10 goals for downtown Minneapolis in our Intersections 2025 plan. While we've made strides in that direction, we have many strides remaining. So, Mr. Chairman and members, moving the dial on transportation and transit requires resources, which is why we have consistently supported proposals at the state and county level, which provided needed funds, including dedicated sales tax revenues and capital bonding allocations. On behalf of the Downtown Council, I'm here today to offer that same support and would end with the comment that for our business leaders, their support is premised on transportation and transit investment as a key element for future economic growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. And Ms. Weinhagen is unable to be here today, so next we're going to take Sean Broom of Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce and Will Schreier of East Metro Strong. And then, do you guys go together?
And we fought.
I don't care. Sure. And then following this, we'll take Laborers of Minnesota, Lyman and Laborers of Minnesota and North Dakota. So I'm not sure how we're going to handle that. John Kavanaugh O'Brien will be next. So. Perfect. So, Mr. Chairs.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having us. My name is Will Schroer. I'm the executive director of East Metro Strong. We're a public-private partnership of businesses, cities, and counties on the east side of the metro working together to improve job growth and economic development opportunities. Our organization is also one of the founding partners of Keep Minnesota Moving, along with the Minneapolis Regional Chamber and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Keep Minnesota Moving was formed to advocate for a stronger and more comprehensive transportation system, including more, better, and faster transit in the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota. We support proposals that would make substantial progress on the four priorities our coalition outlined in December: expanding modern bus rapid transit service, improving the current regular route bus system and service, fully funding Greater Minnesota transit needs, and fully funding core Metro Transit service. We appreciate that the transportation bill in front of us today would make substantial progress on these priorities. Further, this bill recognizes that we are not providing today the transportation that Minnesotans need and want, and that our peer regions are providing to their citizens. We know that it can be done, and we need to catch up both for our own citizens and for our competitiveness. This bill would accelerate progress towards a future that Minnesotans want, a future in which they have a solid variety of choices how to get around, and no one is cut off from opportunity. In conclusion, we support the transportation budget proposals like this one that advance our four priorities. Thank you. Thank you to the committee, and we're here to support you in your work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sean Broom. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, and like Willard said, we're a member of Keep Minnesota Moving along with the St. Paul Area Chamber and East Metro Strong. The business leaders that we speak to every day believe that our state and region must have comprehensive modern transit that ensures that we are prepared to grow and succeed. An increasing number of employees say that they'd prefer to use transit to get to work, but there aren't enough good options. This bill would make significant progress towards fixing that problem. Inaction is not an option. Our highways are congested, and commuters spend too much time stuck in traffic. More buses and bus rapid transit lines are needed to get Minnesotans to work and to school faster. The longer we wait to make these investments, the worse things will get and the more it will cost us. These costs just won't be monetary. They'll also be lost time, lost productivity, and lost opportunities, things we will never be able to get back. That's why our chamber and our coalition supports the transit investments in the House Transportation Bill and in Governor Walz's proposed budget. In addition to having the support of our organizations, Better Transit has the strong support of Minnesotans. Expanded and improved public transit is broadly popular. A survey we conducted found 74% of Minnesotans support making additional investments in transit, and 58% say that they want to use transit more frequently. We urge the legislature to make progress on improving transit now, or risk losing employees, jobs, and economic growth to other regions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Broom.
Thank you.
All right, now we have LIUNA members. And I'm sorry, I did not write down your name, so I can't remember what it was. I apologize. If you please state your name for the record.
John Capital O'Brien.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is John Capital O'Brien. I'm a proud member of Local 563, which is a laborers union. I'm here to talk to you today about roads and bridges to make Minnesotans safer. Minnesota is crumbling in infrastructure, which is making it very unsafe and putting people on the roads at risk. A recent independent study found that there are more than 1,000 Minnesota roads and hundreds of miles that are in poor condition. One example being 94, even coming to St. Paul from Minneapolis. There's potholes on that. The same report gave our bridges a D plus and a C in roads. We deserve better. Our first responsibility is to make roads safer because it affects all around us. My dad is a truck driver. He uses roads constantly. If he's broke down, he doesn't make money. If he's stuck in traffic, he still loses money. With roads in better condition, there'll be less traffic on the roads for us, less accidents happening, and less time repairing. A 20-cent increase to gas tax would make Minnesota safer and ensure that nothing like I-35W bridge collapse happens again. Please vote for the 20-cent gas tax increase. That way it can offset for the inflation, and hopefully we won't have this problem in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Was there anyone else from LIUNA that would like to talk? You're from with LIUNA? You're with LIUNA? Oh, okay. If I was just asking the organization. John here is taking anybody whose name who wants to get on the list, so perfect. I'll just restate that so everybody knows, John, how our committee administrator is taking names for the list as we go forward. So thank you very much. Now we have U of M students, Sam Parmaker, Natasha Sony, and Taylor Larick. And then Melissa from the AFL-CIO is after these folks, followed by Shep Harris.
Hi, I'm Natasha Sony. I'm currently a junior at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. We're here today to advocate for the transportation bill because we're currently working to combat food insecurity on our campus. The U of M resides within a food desert, and according to campus surveys and surveys conducted by Boynton Mental Health, which you can view on their website, 20% of students have been food insecure in the past year, and 8% of students claim that they've been food insecure often or most of the time. We're currently working to expand the zone pass, which allows students to ride the light rail for free within the three stops within the university to one more stop on either side, U.S. Bank and Prospect Park, so students can access Trader Joe's and Fresh Time grocery stores to kind of combat the food desert in which we live. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sam Parmakar, like Ms. Sony mentioned, we're here today in support of the investments in public transit that this bill makes. Expanding the light rail campus zone pass by one stop on either side would allow students on the Twin Cities campus to access two different quality grocery options in nearby neighborhoods. Fundamentally, we believe that increasing the accessibility of transit is one of the most effective tools that we can employ in order to combat food insecurity at the U. We know that the cost of college only continues to rise and puts higher education out of reach for many young people. I know many students who have to work 2, 3, or 4 jobs to simply continue to attend the U, and they do not have the extra money to spend on light rail passes to access affordable, nutritious food options. As a result, we are seeing more and more students experience food insecurity, which in turn inhibits their ability to be fully present and engaged in their classes and extracurricular activities.
Access to food is a basic need, and the state can play an important role in helping students meet that need by supporting the dedicated investments in public transit that this bill would make. Appropriating more money to help our transit system would allow the university and Met Council to work together to help lift this extra burden off students with the proposal we're working on. And finally, just to close, we wanted to mention, we're students, we're here testifying today. We also have several students in the audience who are here to support our proposal. And today is actually Support the U Day here at the Capitol. So I'm sure members will be meeting with different students who are constituents of their districts, and we would just encourage you to have conversations with those students about food insecurity they've experienced and have conversations about their transit needs to learn more about our unique perspective on the issue. Thank you.
In addition to that, I'm a student at the Carlson School of Management here at the University of Minnesota.
Could you give us your name?
Taylor Larrick.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I just wanted to communicate that I work out in Golden Valley, and thankfully my roommates and I have the privilege of being able to share a car. But without having this car, instead of being able to drive 12 minutes into Golden Valley from the University of Minnesota, it would be about 55 minutes to over an hour and 10 minutes to ride public transit with multiple multiple lines involved. So I support this bill so that we can increase investment in transportation into the western and northern suburbs so that other students can have the ability to apply for these internships with some of our great companies in the Twin Cities area and further be able to develop the Minnesota economy. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Wolgamott has a question for you all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, testifiers, for coming to the House today and sharing your really powerful stories. One of the things that's most important to me as a legislator here is making sure that every person in Minnesota has the right to a quality, world-class education. But I just wanted to ask if you could speak more so that we on the committee can understand how the lack of access to transit, to those transportation options, how does that threaten Minnesotans' ability to get their education? How does that create barriers, and how will this help specifically?
So I think everything kind of overlaps in that there's also like a lack of affordable housing surrounding the University of Minnesota. So a lot of times, in addition to paying tuition, students are also worried about paying rent and do not have enough money for food, and with transportation being a barrier and having to invest money into get transportation to accessible food options, students have to invest time into working multiple jobs like Stan pointed out, or sacrificing being able to like access nutritious foods or eat nutritious foods just because they have to worry about school and jobs and all of that. So in that way, it creates a barrier to fully being able to experience the great education that we have at the University of Minnesota.
And if I might just add to your question, Representative Wolgamott, for those that might be a little bit more unfamiliar with the sort of geography of our campus, so the university is what's considered a food desert. We don't have any accessible, affordable food options in the immediate campus area. I know myself and a lot of other students have found themselves running to the CVS or Walgreens to do grocery shopping or the Target Express, and that certainly is not ideal. The foods there cost more money and they are less nutritious. But luckily, we do have great access to public transit in the light rail and the bus system. And just recently, there has been a Trader Joe's that has gone up over by U.S. Bank Stadium and a grocery store called Fresh Time over in Prospect Park. Those are really close to the U, but they're not covered by the zone pass that allows students to get to the campus stops for free. So we simply want to just expand that so students can access those grocery options without having to spend more of their already tight budgets on transportation.
Perfect. Representative Wolgamott.
Well, again, thank you for sharing that. I'm really passionate about this. I also serve on the Higher Education Committee. And so, members, as we proceed, both with this bill that's here before us, but with any work that we do here at the legislature, these testifiers are absolutely right. It's all connected. And if we want to be able to compete in a 21st century economy as a state of Minnesota, we want our students focusing on their studies, not worrying about how they're going to get to class, not worrying about where the next meal is going to come from, not dealing with the ferocious financial balancing act that so many of our students are facing. So, members, I hope that as we move forward that we remember the voices and the stories of these testifiers here today, and I thank you for giving us that perspective so that we can keep that in our minds and in our hearts as we move forward both with this bill and the work that we do here in the House of Representatives.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Melissa from the Minnesota AFL-CIO, followed by Shep Harris, then Anna Odegaard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Melissa Heising. I am Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, a labor federation made up of more than 1,000 affiliate unions representing more than 300,000 working people across the state. I am here to testify in support of comprehensive transportation funding and new revenue as provided for in the DE3 amendment, particularly the gas tax increase indexed to inflation and the local option sales tax for transit. The time is now to invest in Minnesota's transportation system. Our quality of life and Minnesota's economic vitality depends on having safe roads and bridges, easy access to public transit, and safe bike and pedestrian paths. Only 10% of jobs in the metro area are easy to get to by transit, and bus service is very limited in greater Minnesota. A safe, efficient, stable transportation and transit system is necessary for workers to get to work and children to get to school. Also, important provisions in this amendment that we support are the driver's licenses for all and the minimum train crew requirements. New long-term revenue is needed to generate new economic development opportunities throughout the state, help retain and attract a talented workforce, create jobs, and keep Minnesota economically competitive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heising. Next up, we have Shep Harris from the Minnesota Townships Association.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Shep Harris on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I want to thank you for bringing forward the DE3 amendment on behalf of the townships. We're supportive and pleased to see what's in the bill when it comes to town road and bridge funding. However, I want to put in a plug for Representative Wolgamont's bill, which is House File 1577. Because that is a request of $20 million a year. We're heading in the right direction, Mr. Chair and committee, on this proposed amendment to the omnibus budget bill. But as you can see from the handout that might be in your pile there, we've still got some significant challenges. You've got 39% of the state's roads are covered in townships authority. You've got 6,000 bridges, 400 of which are on the deficiency list. So we've got some serious challenges. Just 2 years ago was the last time we got some significant funding, and frankly, unfortunately, it wasn't significant. It was $2 million, which averages out to about $35 per township mile, which isn't even enough money to fill a pothole. So we are encouraged by what's in this bill, but as you have already heard this year and in past years, there are continuous wear and tear on township roads. We've got vehicles that want exceptions to the weight limits. We have commuter traffic, if you will, that is bypassing busy city roads and taking some of those township roads that are adjacent to the cities. So we're getting a lot of wear and tear, and so that's why we hope that a $20 million annual dollar figure is more appropriate. In fact, back in 2012, the TFAC report recommended $15 million. So we're kind of doing some adjusting for inflation. So we just encourage members, as you go forward with this bill, to think a little bit larger, if that's possible, when it comes to resources for the townships. And if I could momentarily just switch my hat on behalf of the city of Golden Valley, of course, I am excited to see the liability cap provision that Commissioner Opat mentioned several minutes ago that deals with the Blue Line extension in Article 6. We are hopeful that that will help move the, and believe that that will help move the ball forward on getting that line extended. So thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Now we have Anna Odegaard, followed by Cam Winton.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Odegaard. I'm the legislative advocate for the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition, which is a coalition of 140 nonprofit organizations who work directly with low-income Minnesotans. I'd like to thank this committee and Mr. Chair for including in your omnibus bill the provisions from Chair Lesch's bill, House File 1061. This bill ends driver's license suspensions for unpaid traffic tickets. You may know that there's been a broad coalition of organizations working on and supporting this bill over the last 2 years, including the city attorneys of Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as the state public defender, and community organizations from across the political spectrum. I'd like to name just a few: Voices for Racial Justice, the Justice Action Network, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, the Second Chance Coalition, and the Minnesota ACLU. Speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition, which is my organization, we're supporting this bill because our members work every day with families for whom the cost of a traffic ticket is a real hardship. Suspending a driver's license for an unpaid ticket often leads to job loss and mounting debt without improving public safety. And preventing people from driving legally to work hurts families and employers and communities. Thank you so much for recognizing that we need to stop suspending licenses for unpaid tickets. This bill will make an enormous difference for many thousands of low-income Minnesotans who need to drive to keep their jobs, who have not committed a dangerous driving violation, but who simply didn't have the funds to pay a traffic ticket on time. On behalf of our members and all of the low-income clients and communities that we care about, thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we have Ann Finn.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. The League is a statewide organization representing 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities. We support House File 1555 as amended. The League appreciates the provisions in House File 1555 that recognize the need for additional dedicated funding for the municipal state aid street system. This is a revenue source that benefits up to 20% of streets in the 148 cities with populations above 5,000. Additionally, these funds help larger cities share in the cost of trunk highway and county projects. We also appreciate the dedicated funding the bill provides for the Small Cities Assistance Account, and it would be very helpful to implement a similar program for the non-MSA streets in MSA cities. I want to especially thank Representative Torkelson for his ongoing leadership and efforts to keep the small cities in the transportation funding conversation. The 705 cities with populations below 5,000 that do not receive discretionary funds through the constitutional formula have patiently awaited the permanent funding source this bill would provide. The permanent and sustainable nature of the MSA and small cities account funding provided in House File 1555 is particularly important to cities because they count on reliable funding to implement efficient pavement management plans. If there's one shortcoming in this bill, it's that it does not contemplate the cost to local units of government when the state expedites investments in trunk highways and state bridges. If we do not provide assistance for local cost participation, the local cost share falls upon property taxpayers. In 2018, this cost amounted to approximately $43 million collectively. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for considering this legislation.
Thank you. Now we have Cam Winton, followed by Amber Backus and Justin Frey.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Cam Winton with the Dorsey Law Firm. Speaking to you today on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. Sorry for the scheduling snafu. I hear my name was called this morning, which is every lobbyist's worst nightmare to have your name called. You're not there, but here I am. Thank you for having me. The Minnesota Telecom Alliance is comprised of telecom companies of all sizes all across the state. And on MTA's behalf, I'm here to express concern and opposition to one and only one sentence in this entire bill. It is on page 68, line 29 of the DE. And since it's just one sentence, I'll read it to you. Notwithstanding paragraph A, and I'll tell you about that in a second, any utility facility installed after August 1, 2019 is not eligible for relocation reimbursement. The nickel version, since my time is tight, is that right now, when utilities move their facilities that are along interstates, for example, if there's an interstate construction project, those utilities are eligible for reimbursement for the cost of moving their facilities. This one sentence would change that for any utility facilities installed after that date, August 1, 2019. Well, why do you care? Why do your constituents care? Well, two ways come to mind. One is that the members of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance are working hard to continue deploying broadband internet across the state. I think a lot of folks at this table probably support the border-to-border broadband internet program, and I, along with others, represent the private sector companies that are partnering with the state to deploy internet. This provision will have a chilling effect on their willingness to go out and put new infrastructure in the ground if unexpectedly and in a severe departure from precedent are going to have to pay to move it anytime there's an interstate project. And secondly, in my closing seconds, I'll say there are all kinds of other infrastructure that non-member companies of MTA are putting out there as they roll out 21st century telecommunications technology. So if we want to incentivize the private sector to keep providing things that your constituents use, I sure hope you'll delete page 68, line 29.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we have Amber Backus, followed by Justin Fay and Jenna Carter following.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Amber Backus here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and our 373 franchise new car and truck dealers who generate upwards of $800 million for Minnesota's transportation infrastructure in the state. I do want to thank the committee for incorporating provisions from Representative Elkins House Bill 1893 and Representative Kosnick 1727 into the bill. These provisions will help us better serve our customers with their vehicle titling and registration needs. We do have concerns with the delayed effective date added to some of the MNLARS provisions that we hope to revisit later. I also want to say thank you for supporting the deputy registrars with the filing fee increases. They're an integral part of the system, and we need to ensure that they can afford to stay in business. But I do want to spend some time reiterating some of the concerns I previously provided about the governor's budget that the House is incorporating. Minnesotans may not notice fluctuations in fuel prices, but they do notice how much they're paying for MVEST and registration taxes. Dealership customers are frequently taken aback when they see the thousands of dollars on their invoice to pay for MVEST and tab fees, and they express their displeasure to our dealers. There's a handout going around, and as you can see it, the rates Minnesota charges are already significantly higher than in the surrounding states for both the motor vehicle sales tax and registration taxes. This proposal exacerbates the difference, making Minnesota vehicle taxes 25% higher than Iowa, 34% higher than Wisconsin, and almost 50% higher than South Dakota. Minnesota does not need to increase the MVEST and registration tax rates to garner more revenue. There's already growth in these funds due to the rising cost of new vehicles, which is increasing with new technologies and powertrains that are being incorporated into vehicles at a rapid pace. Raising the tax rates only makes these safer and cleaner vehicles less accessible to Minnesotans and could ultimately discourage new vehicle sales, reducing anticipated revenues in MVEST. New cars comprise about 6% of the state's fleet. But in 2017, they brought in 18% of the tab fee revenue, over $141 million, and 70% of MVEST dollars, over $540. When new car sales are healthy, so are the state's revenues to fund roads, bridges, and transit. The incredibly high vehicle taxes in this bill will not only cost Minnesotans significantly, but they could also end up costing the state needed resources if sales slump. So thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Now we have Justin Fay, followed by Jenna Carter and Dorian Grills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon to members of the committee. My name is Justin Fay. I'm here on behalf of Fresh Energy, and I'll be extremely brief. We just wanted to thank Chair Hornstein and committee members for the inclusion of Article 4 in the bill, which is titled Transportation and the Environment, but could also be Transportation and Human Health or Transportation and Energy Independence. Transportation sector is responsible for significant impact on human health in the form of fine particulate air pollution. The transportation sector is now the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota, and that percentage is growing as other sectors become cleaner. We think the provisions included in Article 4 are pretty modest, but a very important and meaningful start to solving some pretty difficult policy challenges that the state faces. We particularly wanted to recognize Representative Wolgamott, whose House File 1865 was included in this article, as well as Representative Lippert, who carried House File 1737, which is also included. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we have Jenna Carter, followed by Dorian Grilly, and then Jennifer Munt. I don't see Jennifer around. She's outside. Let her know for me. Ms. Carter.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jenna Carter, and I'm a resident of Bloomington. I'm also an announced candidate for the at-large seat on the Bloomington City Council, so thank you for this opportunity to appear briefly before you. In my travels throughout Bloomington, in the meetings I have held and attended, and in the one-on-one conversations I have had with Bloomington citizens, over and over the issue of transportation comes up. Commuters are concerned with the growing congestion they face on a daily basis. Seniors are troubled by the safety challenges that confront them as they walk to and from their home. Parents, myself and my husband included, are troubled by the crumbling or non-existent pedestrian infrastructure, as well as the speed and volume of automobiles through our city as our children try to move around our neighborhoods and to and from our schools, libraries, and parks. In fact, I have a friend whose four-year-old was riding his bike down the worn-out sidewalk on Nicollet through Bloomington. His bike tire hit an elevated ledge, and he fell into the street and was hit by a Domino's delivery car. Thankfully, other than the trauma and tens of thousands of dollars in medical bills, he was okay. But this story is one of many that highlights the need for improved transportation infrastructure in our city. For these reasons and more, I'm here to support the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. This legislation is the type of approach needed to help modernize Bloomington's existing transportation infrastructure while also fully supporting transit and other means of transportation such as biking and walking. The majority of Bloomington's transportation infrastructure was constructed in the 1950s and 1960s and now is in serious need of investments to maintain their quality and increase capacity to meet today's travel demands. But beyond roads and streets, we, like many other suburban communities, also need a balanced transportation system that encourages transit and bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure to serve our residents and the employees that work in Bloomington, whether or not they own an automobile. Such a system will help create better access to jobs and services, promote higher density transit-oriented development and transit corridors, and improve the safety for residents from youth to seniors and everyone in between. So the measure before you will help do this and more, and as a resident of Bloomington, I want to strongly encourage you to support it or a measure like it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we have Mr. Grilley, followed by Jennifer Munt, and then Leslie Davis.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dorian Grilley. I work for the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. Thank you for including funding for both program and infrastructure for active transportation and safe routes to school in the omnibus funding bill. As I testified before, the need is great and the need is statewide. There are about 60 members of the Minnesota Mayoral Active Transportation Caucus from the suburbs in greater Minnesota, and their simple message, unified message, is that bicycling and walking is important outside the urban core and that any transportation funding bill should include funding for bicycling and walking. BikeMin will work hard to help the Metropolitan Council and metropolitan communities implement the proposed funding increase, which we view as significant, so thank you very much for that. We will also advocate for infrastructure funds for greater Minnesota in the bonding bill, as Representative Runbeck recommended last time I testified. So, and thank you also for providing general fund revenue for program work like education and planning. I believe strongly that education and planning can help maximize the infrastructure investments. I also believe strongly that young people more than ever are expecting these kind of investments from our legislature and our governments. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grilley. Bless you. Now we have Jennifer Munt, followed by Leslie Davis and Jim Robbins. Don't see Jennifer. Leslie Davis. Mr. Davis, please state your name or an affiliation for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Leslie Davis, president of the Earth Protectors. If the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, then I qualify, because I've been here numerous times with the money plan, and that's what I'm here for again. On February 11th, you received a letter from me about the money plan with three attachments: how money is created and how it comes into circulation, how the money plan would work in Minnesota, and a piece of draft legislation that I'd like you to incorporate into the omnibus bill so we can move forward to pay for roads and bridges, all of them, without continuing to tax and borrow. And then we can remove the gasoline tax and the axle tax and start to get a handle on the increasing debt and the increasing inflation. So if you people don't do something this session, I can assure you, you're all going to get a call from my psychiatrist. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Next, we have James Robbins, followed by Joshua Hudick.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, committee members. I'm James Robbins with the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. Our membership comes from the 770 cities, population 5,000 and under, where 250,000 Minnesotans reside. Our city spent more than $225 million in 2017 on their local streets, primarily from property tax impact. As you know, we would like a stable source of funding so these cities can plan to repair and rebuild their street systems. So we greatly appreciate the nearly 5% of those costs covered through the lease sales tax dedication that will put us in the base budget for the first time. We can see our tails, and we like the looks of them. It isn't quite parity with the highway tax distribution provided to the state, counties,
20% of the large city streets and townships, but it is a good start. Looking at the bigger picture, we want to thank you, committee members and staff, for working together, setting aside some differences, reaching out to hear community leaders from places like St. Martin, Franklin, Montgomery, and Cortland. They see your effort. Those leaders are rooting for your continued exhaustive work, negotiating in good faith, so you can reach the proper balance weighing burden and essential needs. So thank you very much for your selfless efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Now we have Joshua Hudick, followed by Noah Shavit, and then Jim Hurst.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Joshua Hudick. I'm representing the 85,000 members across the state of Minnesota for the Sierra Club Minnesota North Star chapter. We have members in greater Minnesota, almost every county, the suburbs, and the big cities of our state. Sierra Club is also a leading partner in the statewide 50-member Transportation Forward Coalition. I thank Chair Hornstein and the committee for your work on this impressive bill that will benefit all Minnesotans. This bill supports clean electric vehicles. It funds safe routes to school for our school children, active transportation for everyone across the state, metro mobility for our aging population, and of course it fixes our Minnesota potholes. You've heard over and over today and throughout the weeks of this session that our transportation system is crumbling. Our transit system is rated a C-. We need action now to fully fund bus and rail operations for Minnesotans across the state. And the good news is, as you've heard before, Minnesota voters overwhelmingly support significant new investment. According to statewide polls, 75% of Minnesotans support this. The plan is to build around 19 bus rapid transit projects that would provide frequent, all-day, cost-effective transit access to jobs across the region. We have a bold vision. I'm sure you've seen it. There's lots and lots of lines on this map. Building this whole bus rapid transit network is crucial to address inequality across our region. It's crucial for our economic competitiveness and our ability to attract and retain our workforce. It's crucial to combating climate change. 10 of these bus rapid transit routes will be built with an eighth of a cent metro sales tax, but all 19 routes will be built with a half cent sales tax. So which 9 projects will be left out? Well, we can't wait 10 years to build just a half of this proposed system. How many people will we have left out for job access? How much less competitive will our region be in 10 years when we don't build out the system? So we urge you to fully support the funding that's necessary to build out a comprehensive transportation system that we so desperately need and secure a sustainable future. Thank you for supporting this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Hodak. Sorry, who has a question? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr.
Is
Chair.
That, is a question for the testifier?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Hodak, so the half-cent sales tax raises quite a bit of money. It's something like $300 million a year. Are you anticipating that the two different systems, the BRT and the LRT, will compete for that money, or are you suggesting and hoping that it would be just devoted to BRT? Because there will be competition, and how will BRT win out when it's, you know, it's really it's very efficient, whereas LRT is not, which and will gobble up most of the funds.
Actually, Mr. Hodak, we're going to let Chair Hornstein weigh in on this. Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, it's certainly our intention here to fund the BRT, the local bus system, the metro mobility system, bus shelters, the basic bus infrastructure. You know, the LRT is funded, the two lines, Southwest and Botano, through the Hennepin County half-cent sales tax. So Mr. Hodak is absolutely correct that that we need this. It's the first quarter of the half cent for accelerating the BRT map, which he accurately showed those 19 lines, and making sure that they're done quickly. We can't do like one line a year if we're lucky, you know, through bonding. So that is really building and operating that system, making sure that people can get on buses and don't have to climb Mount Everest over a snowbank to get in the bus. You know, things, really basic bread and butter kinds of things are what we envision being funded here.
Representative
Rebeck. Mr. Chair, and just to clarify then, Representative Hornstein, so sounds like you're saying a quarter cent, first quarter cent from Hennepin County is for LRT. The second quarter cent is for BRT. And I mean, it's not really very clear how this will be intended.
Thank you. And, this is very important, so I'm glad this is being raised. The state is out of more or less out of the LRT business. That has been the capital costs of LRT are funded half through the federal government, half through Hennepin County. There is some operating. And half of the operating. So there's still a small part of the operating that the state funds. But that is a small amount. That is already covered. The lion's share of LRT is already taken care of. It's accounted for by Hennepin County and the federal government. Mm-hmm. The first quarter cent we envision, certainly the legislative intent here, and if we need language, we can talk about that, but that is related to this local bus service, BRT, Metro Mobility, et cetera, moving forward. The second quarter cent we give to the Transportation Advisory Board. They will decide, you know, the priority projects. The Transportation Advisory Board has not funded LRT. I think maybe the City of St. Louis Park had a small grant for a station upgrade, but, you know, that's it. So you will not see the TAB funding LRT, and you won't see that LRT being funded in the first quarter cent of our new situation. So LRT is really off the table in terms of the state funding. It's a Hennepin County responsibility. It's a federal responsibility.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much. Really appreciate the clarification, Representative Hornstein. It certainly might help to have some verbiage up to that effect. And I guess I'm not certain when you say the half cent. So Hennepin County taxpayers will have the initial one quarter, and then a half cent on top of that?
They're currently paying a half cent dedicated to transit, and so it would be a total of a cent in Hennepin and Ramsey.
Mr. Hodak.
Thank you.
Mr. Hodak had something to add.
Yeah, just for clarification, the lines on these maps and the 19 bus rapid transit routes proposed by Metro Transit and Governor Walz are our BRT routes. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Hodak. Next up, we have Noah Shavit-Lonstein, followed by Jim Hurst, then Dan Larson.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, members. My name is Noah. I'm a staff member at Minnesota 350 and Minnesota 350 Action, who I'm representing today. And at Minnesota 350, we've heard a lot of stories from bus riders around the Twin Cities and the struggles they've faced in our current transit system. We've heard stories about out-of-date and overtaxed buses that are making people sick and aggravating lung conditions. We've heard about stressful long commutes with irregular bus schedules. One story that sticks with me is that of an employee at a downtown cafeteria. Every morning at 4:30 in the morning, at least on weekdays, he catches the number 18 bus, which is a candidate for BRT replacement. It is a sporadic and slow ride, and despite his disability that causes considerable knee pain when he stands for long periods of time, he cannot find a place to sit during this ride on the overcrowded bus. The measure in front of you is the only bill that fully funds our new transit needs with an addition of $300 million over the next 2 years, over $300 million in dedicated transit funding. This is necessary for our community members and for our community connections, for our health, our climate, and our economy. Our members support this, and your constituents will be so excited to have your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Jim Hurst, followed by Dan Larson, then Steve Novak.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, Jim Hurst on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. The MDRA is a statewide association representing approximately 150 out of the 174 total deputy registrar offices in the state. That's comprised of city, county, as well as private operated deputy registrars. I'd like to begin by thanking Chair Hornstein and this panel for including a couple of vital elements within the DE3 amendment, that being compensation for deputy registrars for past losses, as well as filing fee adjustments going forward beginning in the next fiscal year. Deputy registrars collectively contribute over $1 billion every year to the state of Minnesota. Deputy registrars only survive on the filing fee collections that they receive that are generated from completed transactions. Those filing fees have not been adjusted in 8 years. And I thank Representative Elkins, who's chief author of that standalone bill, for adjusting the filing fees. And I want to make the committee very much aware that both elements regarding past compensation as well as future filing fee adjustments, both elements are critical and should be taken together, because absent one over the other will either fail to address our past losses or fail to address our future needs going forward. And with that, I will conclude my comments and thank you, and certainly welcome any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hurst. I appreciate you being here. Next, we have Dan Larson, followed by Steve Novak, and then Kathy Burkett. Mr. Larson, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson representing Minnesota Rural Counties today, an advocacy organization representing 30 rural counties in greater Minnesota. So in previous testimony, I thank you for allowing me to be here today. In previous testimony, I encouraged the committee to think big, identified the needs as big, encouraged the committee to do so, and the bill before you today certainly accomplishes that mission. So I joined the parade of local government testifiers before me in support of funding transportation through the trust fund, which is the way transportation funds funding or needs should be funded. So we appreciate that aspect of the bill. Specifically, MRC believes highway funding should be conducted with constitutionally dedicated funding from a statewide perspective, utilizing funding from a utilizing long-term sustainable funding solutions. So we understand the process that will determine the final transportation funding solution for the session has a long way to go, but we support and appreciate the strong emphasis on increasing the funding to the trust fund, because those protected funds provide the steady and reliable funding source that allow local road authorities to plan and spend precious transportation funding revenues in the most efficient and cost-effective manner. So in closing, I want to point out or reiterate the sales tax shift back to the general fund accounts for 7 cents of the proposed 20 cents. This is a key point that we'd like negotiators to remember going into end of session discussions. So thanks again for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Larson. Next, we have Steve Novak, followed by Kathy Burkett, then Lori Johnson.
Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Novak, I represent the Minnesota Inter-County Association. We are essentially the suburban counties, 4 out of 5 and 10 of the larger greater Minnesota counties in the state. So the first thing we want to say is that over the last several years in this committee, there hasn't been too many major items that the Democrats and Republicans have agreed on, but one of them, importantly, has been the size and scope of our funding deficiency in roads and bridges that we've pegged at $6 billion over 10 years. And so I do want to commend the author, chairman, and the committee for putting in front of us a bill that does address that problem. We may have differences of opinion how to get to that total, but this bill does that, and that should be underlined. Secondly, as part of that, a significant part of the new funding would be in constitutionally dedicated revenues through things like the gas tax and tab fees and so forth. And our organization, in particular, wants to say thank you for that, because that guarantees that monies go to the County Road and Bridge Program. And I think you all know this, but the County Road and Bridge system is about 2 to 3 times larger than the state highway system. And when we don't receive those dedicated revenues on a regular basis, the challenge gets greater and greater in terms of taking care of that system for the people of the state. Third, I want to touch on the lease vehicle sales tax, which has been an issue that's been very important to the suburban members of our organization and also the greater Minnesota counties in terms of greater Minnesota transit. You did a lot of creative things as you worked on this particular section. So first off, I'll say thank you for the increase in money to the suburban counties and to the greater Minnesota transit. I do want to say that we have some cautionary comments to be made about the $32 million in general funds, which we took a long time to try to get dedicated to transportation. That has now changed. We would have preferred to keep that in transportation. We have a concern, I think, organizationally about a split in our financial marriage that we've had for a decade between greater Minnesota counties and greater Minnesota transit and our suburban counties. That's now been interrupted and changed. But again, I'll conclude by the way I started. Thank you for the increase, and we'll see how this all goes as we walk down the long road to turning this bill into a law. The fourth thing I want to say is that the bonding features of the bill are very good. We appreciate that. Significant more money for roads, bridges, transit, and that's all good for the people of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Next up, we have Kathy Burkett, followed by Lori Johnson, then Finn McGarry. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and the committee. I just wanted to say that I wasn't planning on speaking today, but after this morning...
Could you please state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you. Kathy Burkett.
Thank you.
Yes. After this morning, I wasn't planning to speak today, but I felt compelled and frustrated as I listened to all those that were testifying, or most of them. I can't even pretend. I understand the complexities of your task, but I thank you for this opportunity. But we as individuals, families, and businesses are groaning under the tax burdens that are placed upon us. And I'm also frustrated by the Met Council, which is appointed. They have power over us. They do not need to be compelled to listen to us, and we have no way to touch them. Yet they have power. But I just ask, when it comes to budgeting, my family, we have a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, and my husband is a small business owner, and it's the same thing for him. I just ask, where's the budgeting here for these projects? Where has it been? We are one of the highest taxed states there already. As a matter of fact, we have friends, one that sold off his businesses and moved to another state. We have another that closed his practice and went to another state. And my husband, as he said a few years ago, you know, the only reason why our business is here, because we can take it anywhere. We have four parents still. That's why we're here. Otherwise, why would we? So we are continually, as citizens, not asked, but told to do more for less. And I'm charging you with that same, challenging you with that same. I don't have the words for it, but you get the concept. We are groaning. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burkett. Next we have Lori Johnson, followed by Finn McGarry, and then Derek Peterson.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Lori Johnson. I live in St. Paul. I'm a proud member of the Laborers Local 563. I'm here to ask today, ask you to fix our transportation infrastructure to advance equity and efficient transportation system. Is necessary in order for people and communities to reach our full potential. Working people rely on public transportation to connect to jobs and economic opportunity. The American Society of Civil Engineers found that average Minnesotans pay more than $1,000 a year in gas, lost time, and car repairs due to roads in poor condition. A deficit transit system means less time and money to spend with our children and families. We deserve better than to be stuck in traffic going from job to job. We deserve better than expensive car repairs due to potholes and roads in poor condition. We deserve the opportunity to live and work where we choose. Our crumbling infrastructure is holding us all back. We need to invest in people and communities to grow and attract the best talent and compete with other diverse and connected states. Please vote for a 20-cent gas tax increase indexed to inflation dedicated to fixing our roads, bridges, and transportation infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. Next, we have Finn McGarity, followed by Derek Peterson, and then Jennifer Munt is here now, so we'll have her after. Hi, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me. My name is Finn McGarity. I am here on behalf of Move Minnesota and Transportation Forward. We represent over 50 partner organizations and 14,000 Minnesotans who support transit, biking, and walking. Long-term and statewide investments in transit, bicycling, and walking are critical for our growing metro region and our state. The Twin Cities region is anticipating 800,000 new residents by 2040. I'm going to paraphrase Met Council Chair Nora Slawick, but that level of population growth is analogous to the population of North Dakota inhabiting our region. Obviously, we need more investments in transportation options to accommodate that level of growth. We also need more investments in transportation options to combat climate change, secure economic opportunity for all Minnesotans. We know that our communities in greater Minnesota, the suburbs, and the Twin Cities all have unique transportation needs. We thank Chair Hornstein and this committee for introducing this legislation and working to address Minnesotans' long overdue transportation needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Derek Peterson, followed by Ms. Jennifer Munt, and then after that, we'll have, if there's anyone who has not testified yet who would like to testify for or against this bill, we'll have a little bit of time that we can get anyone else included. So, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. I appreciate you pronouncing my name right first off. My name is Derek Peterson. I live in Esco, Minnesota. I'm a proud member of the Labor's Local 1091 out of Duluth, representing over 1,000 men and women. I'm here to talk about the honest conversation, raising taxes, and solving our transportation funding problems all over the state. The Minnesota State Highway System needs approximately $39 billion in funding over the next 20 years. MnDOT estimates it will have $21 billion to invest in the system over the same time period, resulting in an $18 billion funding gap. We need $18 billion in new revenue just to maintain our current state, which is in, as you guys know, C and D range for grades. We don't get what we don't pay for. A 20-cent index gas tax along with additional new revenue will provide sufficient revenue to fill the state's $18 billion state highway infrastructure gap. The gas tax is fair. It's just like a user fee. Those who use the roads and bridges are paying for improving the roads and bridges. And the gas tax is dedicated to fixing our roads and bridges, keeping politicians from diverting the money to other areas of government. Please vote for a 20-cent gas tax increase indexed to inflation, dedicated to fixing our roads and bridges and transportation infrastructure. We can't keep kicking the can down the road because it doesn't make it very far before falling in a pothole. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, there might be a question.
Oh, question. Representative Runbeck.
Would it be okay? I just would be interested because you're a road builder, correct? You work, Mr. Chair, you work for and you build roads or?
Yeah, we do infrastructure for roads and bridges. And
okay.
Representative Runbeck.
And what, I mean, full employment is what, 10 months of the year you're able to work on projects?
Yeah, well, in Duluth it's a little less because obviously our frost and weather, it all depends on that.
Okay. Ripping, I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of, I mean, I think that we all talk about how many road projects and how much construction there is, and there has been over the last 4 or 5 years. It seems like there's something missing here between what you're saying is that there's not enough and we're falling short and really what has the actual dollars and the actual projects that have gone on. So have you been able to have work in the last, 4 years?
Well, I'm a business representative now for the Labor's, okay. But before that, but we have to, we do temporary jobs to feed our families and put a roof over our homes. So all these dollars that go into this stuff really support working families.
Sure. I mean, we all want the same, and I just think that we ought to be clearer about just what we have done and what has been accomplished in the, in the current era of road building. There's been a lot of improvement and a lot of growth and a lot of expansion. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next up, we have Jennifer Munt, followed by Frank Long. Welcome.
Welcome. Chair Tab Key committee members, I'm Jennifer Munt, and I'm a resident of Minnetonka. I served on the Metropolitan Council during the Dayton administration, and I was chair of Transit for Livable Communities. Today I'm here to ask you to support House File 1555. As you know, Minnesota's roads are falling apart and our transit systems are falling behind. Now it's time for state lawmakers to greenlight new revenue for better transportation. We often talk about transportation in terms of concrete and steel, dollars and cents, but it's really about people. Transportation means opportunity for all, no matter who you are or where you live. People need safer roads and better transit to get to work and school. Our employers need world-class trains and buses in order to attract the best and the brightest workers. Our elders need a ride to live independently. Our families need better bicycle and pedestrian routes that connect them to schools, jobs, and recreation. Our farmers need sturdy bridges to get their produce to market. And our businesses require highways to quickly move their goods. Bottom line, everyone has a stake in transportation, and everyone benefits from this transportation funding package. Together, we must move past the divisive debates that pit rural against urban, roads against rail, and farmers against environmentalists. We're all in this together as one Minnesota. When the 35W bridge collapsed, I was there to help the survivors. All of us were shocked because bridges shouldn't fall. We trust government to shore up our infrastructure to keep us safe, and we trust you to do that this session. We're also depending on you to provide stable funding for our transit system. Without it, there's no certainty for riders or businesses. We add a bus route one session and eliminate it the next session due to budget cuts. Each year we delay our urgent transportation needs, the cost to taxpayers increases. From Mankato to Minneapolis to Moorhead, Minnesotans are demanding action now. There's no reason Minnesotans can't have nice things. If all of us chip in, we can afford electric buses, smooth roads, and safe bridges. We deserve a Minnesota where the air is clean, our families are healthy, and people are connected. This transportation package is comprehensive for transit, roads, and bridges. It fairly balances the needs of greater Minnesota and the metro. It's a long-term solution with funding dedicated to transportation. And it wisely ends transportation's drain on the general fund when those dollars are desperately needed for education and health care. Our cherished quality of life and Minnesota's economic vitality depend on safe roads and bridges and easy access to public transit in communities where people can bike and walk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
All right, next up we have Frank Long. Followed by David Mosman and then Jay Severance.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chair, members. I'm not a member or a representative of a union. I'm not a member of government, not a representative from a government entity, and I don't represent a industry that has a vested interest in this, so guess which side I'm on. I'm a small business owner from the West Metro, and I don't know a lot of quilters, but I know a lot of landscapers, and I know a lot of farmers in Sibley, Carver, and McLeod counties. And I guess we're all part of the 73% that were against this tax in the Carroll Levin poll that came out today. This is not, this is not widely viewed by small business owners like myself as something that's going to be helpful. If you need somebody to build a wall or do stairs out behind your house, I'm your guy. If you need somebody to do a forecast and try to figure out how to change my structure for all my customers, you want me to build stairs out behind your house. This is problematic, and this has a lot of us very worried. We've got a $1 billion surplus projected. We had a transportation bill last time that was actually put together and paid for, but then not signed in by the governor. I don't see a reason for this much expansion. I don't see a reason why we really, and God, just listen to this. This is a kitchen sink of things. I mean, I came down here worried about the gas bill, and I've listened to everything that this covers and all the ins and outs. This is a complicated mess. Lord knows if I ran my business like this, I would not have a business. I'm very concerned. This is going to be tough on me, tough on any small business owner that's going to try to wrap their hands around the cost and the increases. Everything I install comes by freight. Everything I do is going to raise prices, and I'm going to have to figure out how to explain this to my customers. And there will be a hit the next cycle when they get the shock of what the increases are that I have to have because I don't have the margins to absorb this. When they see this, it's going to hurt market share. It's going to hurt my business. It's going to hurt every small business across this state. Think about that when you go ahead with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Long. David Mosman.
Here's the chair. Here's the microphone.
Thank you. I'm David Mosman from Minneapolis. Came here at the suggestion of Move Minnesota. I'd like to talk to you about my own personal story. It comes to everybody. I used to drive. I worked. I moved from location to location. Eventually, I had to decide when to stop driving. Fortunately, a couple minor mishaps convinced me it was time to look for an alternative. At that time, I lived in rural Virginia. There were no mass transit options. There was a lousy junkyard bunch of cabs. I had to rely on friends and family to get to wherever I needed to go, to work, to the hospital, to wherever. I think that you all know somebody who shouldn't drive. You probably know somebody who can't drive. Ask yourselves what you would do if you couldn't drive. We need options, and that's a safety issue across the state, across the nation, around the world, and for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mosman. Jay Severance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jay Severance. I live in downtown St. Paul. I'm very much a supporter of transit, and I'm also a member of the Board of Directors of All Aboard Minnesota, and we support primarily intercity rail, such as Amtrak and the Empire Builder, which is our only current train in Minnesota. We have several bills that have been introduced to support the development of trains, additional trains to Chicago, additional trains to Duluth, or new trains to Duluth, extension of trains to Fargo, and eventually trains going south to Des Moines and Kansas City. The bill that supports the development of these is House File 1493. We've not had an opportunity to speak to that yet. I believe the chairman said that we would get an opportunity. The money that is in this bill, first of all, I want to appreciate that the money for supporting the passenger rail office was included. This is the first time in several years that we've been able to accomplish that. However, there is other money that's going to be required in order to pursue the development of these lines. So I just want to put that on the table. I don't know if it's got to go in this bill. We'll pursue it in the bonding committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Severance. We have Representative Koznick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the testimony. Just had a question.
Sure.
Your final comment was that, if I heard it right, that there would be a need for other money.
Yes.
To continue some of these projects.
Yeah, and
Mr. Severance.
But what I can quote here is there are several bills that are outstanding. House File 387 supports the Twin Cities Duluth Northern Lights Express. House File 1493 further supports NLX and the second train to Chicago and extension to Fargo, and some for the North Star Commuter Service as well, which is already in the budget. Then House File 1804 is specifically for the Twin Cities Milwaukee second train. And House File 1179, you've already included in the budget. That's the North Star Commuter Service.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you. I don't want to belabor the committee's time. I could probably add it up what the amounts would be on that, but I guess I'd be curious what those additional amounts would be. And
okay.
If it's testifier or your opinion, then we would need to, the current excessive taxes that are listed in this bill wouldn't satisfy the need for those projects?
I see it, unless I missed it, but as I see it, that money is not included.
Thank you.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that these are bonding proposals.
That's basically.
Yeah, and then we have what we've typically done in this committee over many years is not hear and pass bonding bills out of the committee, but at a certain point we have a courtesy, informational hearing on these, which we may do later once we've disposed of this bill. So just wanted to be clear that those were, you know, that would be in Chair Murphy's jurisdiction.
Right. And I can give you the amounts if you care to have them.
I would be curious. Maybe we can do that offline. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Severance. Now we have Molly Clark. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Molly Clark. I'm a public policy associate with the Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, and I'm just here to express our greatest thanks to Chair Hornstein and this committee for the inclusion of the language in Mitchell's Law. This is stemming from Kelly Moeller's bill that would allow our emergency contacts to be added to driver's licenses. This stemmed from one of our advocates who had a grassroots idea and put it into action, and we really appreciate your support and taking the time and really putting the investment into this program. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Clark. That was the final person we had on our list today. So, Chair Hornstein, do you have any final comments before we adjourn?
Mr. Chair, no, thank you. I really appreciate the public's involvement and the excellent testimony that we've heard today and the good questions from members of the committee. And I look forward to a good discussion tomorrow as we debate the bill and consider amendments. And, again, there's some good ideas I think came out of the questions that I'll you know, consider as we're moving forward. So, and then, Mr. Chair, thank you for, as always, running a good and efficient and inclusive meeting. So we look forward to tomorrow.
Thank you very much. And so just so everyone is aware, we will have 12:45 tomorrow, our normal time. We will begin markup of the bill. And would you like to make the announcement about amendments again, Chair?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, we know this is a complicated and long bill, so we don't have the typical 24-hour rule. But I know that our staff would appreciate it if you could get amendments in by 7 o'clock tonight. If it's 7:32, I'm sure that's fine. But, you know, if we could get those in this evening by 7, that would be preferable. And then we'll post those. Mr. Howe will post those as soon as we get them. And then we'll, my understanding, Mr. Chair, and you can correct me, is that we have the room here for our usual committee time, 12:45 to 2:15, and if necessary, we would meet after session tomorrow night to finish.
Right. And then if we need more time to finish.
Yeah, he's really learned the chair's prerogative on that.
Right, exactly. So, all right, any questions from committee members about process here? All right, thank you very much, everyone, and thank everyone for your comments. We are adjourned until tomorrow.